Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Program, the third one of this week. It's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. It's hump day. It's downhill to Friday. There's a big, badass convection thunderstorm brewing right outside the studio door, so God only knows whether or not we'll be able to broadcast tonight. They have a way of taking us down. Our series of tubes, not that reliable, tends to run under the bed and hide along with the little schneegles every time a thunderstorm pops up in the air. So cross your fingers. If it goes away, it goes away, and I'm sorry. And I certainly hope it doesn't go away, because by God, I'm loaded for bear. I'm sort of reeling from the quality of the programs. I'm not a big one for self-aggrandizement. I'd be huge in the media and subbing for anchors on MSNBC or something by now if I was. But at any rate, no, I feel real good about the about the shows we've had the last couple of nights. Maybe it's just because I'm so doggone happy to be back from that monstrous opus across the United States. Good to be back at home. Good to be back in the home studio, in the home studio chair. Maybe that's what it is. Or maybe the material's just been so good lately. A trained SEAL could do talk radio about the way the right wing's been behaving. Ha, ha, ha. Well, I don't know. We'll try. But no, it's beyond all of that, Wednesday is a special day for me, for us here in the Horn family, on the Horn. Wednesday is that most special of days. It's the second holiest day of the week behind Sunday, or for some of you, Saturday. Because, well, just about now, the deacons are finishing up their seconds on dessert. God, they ripped through that fresh hand-picked blueberry cobbler like Sherman going through Georgia. It was... We don't like to talk about that, but it was true. It was true. The deacons did. They did. And sort of trundled their the pasty, doughy, the flabulous asses up into the sanctuary. Because, brethren and sistren, it is not just the middle of the week. It's not just hump day. It's not just downhill to Friday. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sistren. And hallelujah, we got us some celebrating to do. If we could get the minister of music to come up here and lead us in our opening hymn, please, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. ever said religion should be free.
Oh, hot set, Rawson on the roll, rock, on the roller, on a brawler, brawler, suet, I love you. Welcome, brethren and sisters. Get in off the street. Quit smoking them demon cigarettes. Come in out of the vestibule. Quit. What, don't eat up all the after dinner mints. They've been sitting there since before the Second World War in the vestibule. Get out of them things. Come on down that blood red carpet and get on your knees right here in front of the altar. Get on your knees and lay your hands upon the subwoofers, brethren and sisters, and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. Glory! I am Archpope Bishop Maximum Mormon Bob Kincaid, and this here is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Feel it in your bones. Glory, glory, glory. You know how it is here in the Cathedral. Every now and then we'd like to take you out live on location. And we've got a special reason for doing that this evening. Those heathens in California, them activist liberal judges, has done struck down the holiness ban on the homosexual merge. Glory, oh my God, the demon's apocalypse is upon us, and the seven-headed monster has arisen from the deep. Amen and amen. We take you now, brethren and sistren, out to the central headquarters, the temple, yea, verily, the temple, the very beating heart of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, where disturbing things are taking place as a result of that liberal activist court in California making all that Mormon money just go swirling down the toilet and overturning the Proposition 8. We take you now to Salt Lake City.
What's killing him? I think it must be my music.
No, Granny, it wasn't the music. It's them Homer sectionals a-wanting to get married and have matching china and embroidered bathroom linens that they only put out when the company comes and little monogrammed soaps. That's what's making them Mormon heads explode. Glory, hallelujah. Oh, my God, it is a travesty upon this here nation. Yes, indeed, amen, hallelujah. For in the Bible, in the book of Flippin' at Floppians, it says, yea, verily, that when Mormons spend billions of dollars in conjunction with their arch enemy, the Roman Catholic Papists, and the two come together and marry their money together, and they have a non-traditional marriage of their money to fight off the homosexuals, brethren and sistren, hallelujah, amen, that money shall be used to destroy the homosexual menace in California and America. Only it didn't work. That's right, an activist judge in California has today stricken down Proposition 8, the product of homophobic businesses, homophobic Californians, homophobic Utahns, homophobes all over the United States stepping up to try to make sure that Gary and Steve or Mindy and Susie couldn't get married, couldn't live forever in connubial bliss, couldn't, in fact, contribute to setting up an entire legal industry dedicated to homosexual divorce, because they ain't all going to work now, are they? Can't have that, but they got slapped. Yes, yes, all over California amongst the right wing, it is as if their little Martian heads are exploding, as Slim Whitman sings.
Ooh.
the very words on the page of the legal opinion being like unto yea verily Slim Whitman. Heads are exploding all over. I only wish we had that TV box plugged into the computer here that's sending out the program so brethren and sestren, we could tune it in to the Fox News channel. You understand that's a brand name only. Ain't no news in Fox News. That's just like chicken of the sea tuna like we talked about last night, right? We could tune right in and watch Glenn Beck's little head explode. Or maybe some other right-wing bastard. Oh, brethren and sistren, if we had that TV box, I could tune right over for the breaking news at the Christian Broadcasting Network, and we could watch Francis Marion Robertson, otherwise known as Pat. We could watch Francis's head just pop right inside his little earth-invading bubble helmet. We could, brethren and sistren, we could. Oh, it would be a glorious thing to behold. And one of these days, maybe we will. Oh, I hear the wrath of God even now as we speak. There goes the first thunderclap. Hang on, it might be a bumpy ride. But we'll get through it, brethren and sistren, because we have the power of common sense flowing through us right here in the cathedral. Yes, indeedy, and if you want to support the work we do here in the Cathedral of Common Sense, do by all means go to headonradionetwork.com. Go there. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Hallelujah. Go there. And use that PayPal button. Press it and press it again, brethren and sisters. Press that PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. The tab says contribute. Press that button and help us keep this on the air so that we can all joyously celebrate. We can all joyously celebrate as the little Martian heads explode in their little Martian helmets. Now that they realize that, yea, verily, them homosexuals might yet be getting married in California. Indeed, indeed, indeed. That's the only way we can get out the glorious message of common sense to you from right here in the brick frame vinyl covered cathedral. Okie dokie. Sounds good. There's an ad that you can use the PayPal button, or you can just as easily use the snail mail address. It all goes to the same place, and Brother Wayne is more than happy to take your checks and contributions down to the Horn Bank account and deposit it so that we can keep our bills paid. Amen, hallelujah, and glory. 13 minutes past the hour, we are off to a roaring start on this prayer meeting Wednesday edition of the Horn. Now, it's the truth. Proposition Hate was stricken down by a state court in California. And now, and this has got, you got to hope this is a long shot. It would appear that the proponents of hate, these Mormons and Roman Catholics and various and sundry fundamentalist evangelicals and so forth, they done got themselves a stay of execution. Got themselves a stay till they can appeal it to the Ninth Circuit. You know that Ninth Circuit, the one that the Savage Wiener is forever going on about out in the San Francisco Bay Area, talking about how they are such a liberal institution, just full of liberal activist judges. So we can only hope that their liberal activist judging will come to the fore and manifest itself so that we may, in fact, enjoy even more skulls a-poppin'. It used to be they called bad moonshine pop skull, but apparently now it's gone political, and a simple ruling from a court judge in California can make little fundamentalist heads explode, and I say the more the merrier. I may have to just celebrate by playing this all night long. How could I not? Hey, how am I supposed to know they're not speaking in tongues when their heads explode, right? And by the way, it's 14 minutes past the hour, and just to let you know what to expect out of the program this evening, here in about 15 minutes we will be joined on the phone by two really, really wonderful people. One you've heard from before, that's Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash, buzzflash.com. And we're going to talk a little bit about the recent merger between BuzzFlash and truthout.org, because I know a lot of you go to Truthout every day or have Truthout's alerts sent to you in your email every day to keep up with what's going on in the world of independent media, independently provided media. Truthout's been doing an amazing job for a number of years, and they're on my short little list of go-to places for show prep every blessed day. So Mark Carlin will join us, as will Truthout's managing editor, Maya Shenwar. And we'll talk about a media model going forward and what we can expect from the new BuzzFlash Truthout merger. And not only that, but how we as the so-called liberal media will go about getting the message out. Now, and I'm going to go to the phones real quick, and we'll take a phone call before we get started on the rest of the evening. But the other thing I wanted to do is that I'm reminded from time to time, and I appreciate it, that I tend to behave as if everybody who's listening to this program has been listening to this program for the last 7 years. Obviously, that's not true. Sometimes, and frequently, actually, we have new listeners. And when we have new listeners, it's good to sort of help people get their head around the way this works, because this is not your typical talk radio. This is, in fact, conversation radio. And it means something entirely different from talk radio. Talk radio is best exemplified by the likes of Flesh Flimball, the oxymoron, the $40 million junkie, who, when he takes a call, says things like, "Hey, you're welcome to the program, my friend." Howdy, Rush. I'm so happy to talk to you. I've been waiting on the phone for about 3 years. I just wanted to say we love you out here in Busted Knuckle, Rush. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me. You know, your call reminds me of why it is that Barack Obama is such a disgusting communist. And it works like that, and that's about as much as the caller gets in. But in conversation radio, it works entirely differently. In conversation radio, as we have invented it here on the Horn, you who call in and offer your thoughts and your ideas are every bit as important as anything that I may do or say here. Conversation radio recognizes that the people in the people of America, working people, day in and day out, are the ones who have the real expertise. And as such, deserve our not only our respect, but our attention and our, you've got a lot to teach. We've got a lot to learn from each other. So that's what conversation radio is really all about. Now, just so you'll know, I'm talking to absolutely nobody right now because the first thunderstorm just blew through. And it looks like this may become a very, very interesting evening. It looks as though our conversation with Maya Shenwar and Mark Carlin may be put at hazard, because it took the phones and it took the internet, and the only thing I'm doing right now is recording the program for posterity, shall we say, for rerun purposes. This is getting ugly. I think it's about time I need to make a quick phone call as soon as I can get the internet up and running. And see what I can do. So I tell you what, there will be a little gap in the recording, a little gap in the programming, while I take a moment and get things pulled back together. But at least we got a good start to the program. How about that, okay? Stand by. Is this thing on? I'm still here. We've had a couple of huge crashes of lightning. And while we were down, a couple of corrections rolled in. I screwed up a little bit. But you know, when I'm in the spirit, when I'm taken away by the spirit, I'm liable to make a mistake here and there. But yeah, the decision was rendered in the U.S. District Court in California today. So hence why the stay pending the trip to the liberal activist 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. At any rate, this should prove quite interesting out in California, because if we may safely assume, and we may not safely assume, but if as we may safely assume that the decision will be upheld in the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Then the next step is the Supreme Court of the United States, which is going to have to walk very, very gingerly across this because, you see, you invalidate one proposition in California and you never know how many others might follow suit. And next thing you know, California might actually be able to impose enough taxes to run a school system again. So the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, will have to tread very lightly on this one. So at any rate, we're back. I took the downtime to use my cell phone email, which is still working, mercifully, to send a note to Mark Carlin and Maya Shenouar telling them that, no, sorry, I better not try to do the conversation tonight because with this thing going the way that it is, God only knows how much of the conversation we would get in. So we will reschedule that for another evening and trust that it's not going to be thunderstorms all the way to December. Well, it could be, though. You know, welcome to global climate change. But yeah, you get the idea. There's a dozen different things out there to have fun with this evening. But let me just tell you a little story from my reality. You know, I go on about this stuff from time to time because it makes me absolutely insane. It truly, truly does. I think I may have mentioned a couple of days ago that I was going to put a couple of shoulders on the smoker, because I love the smoker and it keeps from heating up the house. And, you know, pulled pork pig is one of my favorite things on planet Earth. I did that. And the thing with barbecue is you got to let it smoke low and slow for a long, long time. And I did that. Either Agnes or me keeping good cowboy brand charcoal. See, this is what product placement would sound like on the horn if we did product placement. Using nothing but good cowboy brand charcoal. It's real lump charcoal, not made with any fillers or additives or starches or glues or anything. Not like those little lump briquettes with the K on them. This is actually wood, hardwood, mostly oak and maple, that's been turned into charcoal. And in a very environmentally conscious, low-emission fashion, which makes it... And I get mine at Lowe's because they're the only people that carry it. The company's headquartered out of Brentwood, Tennessee. And really, it's the only charcoal that I use. And so I went through about two bags on this, two big old bags. Just keeping the heat low and slow in the smoker and getting the shoulders ready to go. And pulled them off yesterday evening and then just sort of warmed them, kept them warm in the oven until they became just fall apart with a fork tender. Oh, they're good. Oh, mercy, it's good. I tried it earlier today and I thought I was going to cry. It was like, you know what, screw the little crackers. We ought to be using pulled pork for communion because it is heavenly. And so I may have mentioned that Ferg has started football practice and so forth. But so this evening I thought, by golly, now we're going to have us some barbecue. And I had, in the midst of everything else that is my world and my day, I had forgotten to make a pot of barbecue sauce because I like to make my own barbecue sauce. It's, you know what the secret is? Pickle juice, dill pickle juice, absolutely. That's the secret of the sauce. But I'd forgotten to make some, so I thought, oh, screw it. I'll go to the grocery store and pick up a bottle of something tolerable. And it was about an hour and 15 minutes before showtime, and I ran out and got it and brought it back. And it was a Kraft brand hot and spicy barbecue sauce. You know me. It's got to be hot and spicy. Trust me, this story has a point. And I got it home, and Agnes had gone ahead and done me up. I'm not so much crazy on the bread. I like the meat. You know, I was Atkins before Atkins was cool. I don't eat a whole lot of bread. And so there was this lovely plate of pulled pork that she had prepared for me. And I got my bottle of store-bought barbecue sauce out. And, you know, I ruin everything for myself. I ruin everything for myself. So what did I do? I get the thumb around the lid to break the paper and unscrew it and everything, and on the plate, right? put the thing back on. And like I said, I ruin everything for myself because what did I naturally just have to do? Because I thought, wait a minute. If I talk about this on the air, Richard's going to call in and tell me about the high fructose corn syrup that's in it. So let's go ahead and get it over with. You know, Richard ruined tomato soup for me. And so, lo and behold, I looked down at it. Kraft hot barbecue sauce. Slow simmered. Really? I didn't know that you could slow simmer in a 500 million gallon vat. Kraft Foods Global, Inc., Northfield, Illinois, 60093-2753, USA. Recipes at kraftfoods.com. See, this is not product placement because I am damning these people with faint praise. Ingredients. Now, remember, this is Kraft Hot Barbecue Sauce. What did I just tell you was the secret of the sauce? Pickle juice. Pickle juice. Got to be a little thin. It's got to have a lot of twang to it. Along the way, I'll throw in a home-smoked couple of chipotle peppers just to give it a little, you know. We smoke them and dry them on the smoker over very low heat. Kraft Hot Barbecue Sauce, slow simmered. Ingredients. Now remember, I just said the secret of the sauce is the pickle juice. So in Bob's sauce, the ingredient label would start with last week's pickle juice. Because pickle juice is vinegar. It doesn't go bad. Pickle juice. Tomato puree. Mustard. Apple jelly from the Amish country. You know, that kind of stuff. Apparently not at Kraft Foods Global, Inc., where they slow simmer the Kraft Hot Barbecue Sauce in a 500 million gallon vat. Ingredients, high fructose corn syrup, you stupid bastard. Ingredients, high fructose corn syrup, vinegar, see, pickle juice. See, the secret's not, in Kraft Hot Barbecue Sauce, slow simmered in vats. The secret is not the pickle juice. The secret of the sauce is not the pickle juice. It's the high fructose corn syrup because we know by virtue of labeling requirements that what it's got most of in it has to be the first thing on the label. Ingredients. High fructose corn syrup. And by the way, yes, in answer to a question, that would be the dill pickle juice. Not sweet gherkins. Just makes my mouth turn inside out thinking about using sweet pickle juice for the barbecue sauce. High fructose corn syrup, vinegar, water, tomato paste, salt, modified food starch. By the way, modified food starch? Shh. Corn byproduct. Contains less than 2% of spice. Kraft hot barbecue sauce slow simmered in a vat with less than 2% of spice. Natural hickory smoke flavor, mustard flour? Mustard flour? I don't want no mustard flour. Dried garlic, dried onions, and paprika. Now, those would be, yes, that would be kosher dill pickle juice. By God, if the next question is Hasidic or Reformed, I'm going to be really pissed. high fructose corn syrup in the barbecue sauce. So I ran to the refrigerator, just thinking, well, you know, I can okay, I won't use it. I'll go use some good old fashioned Heinz 57. That's close enough. Won't be fooled again, you know. They got a saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, you won't get fooled again. Ingredients, Heinz 57. Ingredients, tomato paste, high fructose corn syrup, malt vinegar, distilled white vinegar. You know, when you're down to screwing with my barbecue, you're in trouble with Bob. And I mention all this because there's a story out there. A story of some considerable significance, and by all means, let's work our way into the story with a little giggle. To wit.
Want a popsicle?
Don't those have high fructose corn syrup?
Yeah, so?
Well, you know what they say about those, right?
No.
Oh,
What are they saying? What do they say?
I heard that...
Jesus Christ, Ned. This is just like you to go on and on about high fructose corn syrup when you don't even know anything about it. You're an idiot. Like sugar, high fructose corn syrup is fine in moderation, unlike you, who I can't f***ing stand in any amount. Eat the popsicle, asshole. I mean, where would you have even learned anything about high fructose corn syrup? You don't read.
I saw there was going to be something about it on the news.
Oh, yeah, you saw a promo that there was going to be a story about high fructose corn syrup on the news. You didn't watch it, did you? Did you? Well, I watched it, Ned, and I learned that high fructose corn syrup is the chemical equivalent of table sugar. Jesus Christ, how many f***ing popsicles are you going to eat anyway that it even f***ing matters?
Sorry.
Don't touch me! This is why I'm cheating on you.
Get the facts, or you're a total douche like this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Only there's a problem. After years and years of manifest concern about high fructose corn syrup, Remember how we got a little dodgy about saccharin because it was shown to cause cancer in one out of 652,323,412 lab rats who were fed it, by the pound, probably along about the same time that they were giving it unlimited amounts of powder cocaine. Well, this isn't like that. High fructose corn syrup, contrary to the High Fructose Corn Syrup Manufacturers Association, isn't just like sugar, and it isn't okay in moderation. I feel a little vindicated by this story. Published over at Raw Story via Reuters, because I've been railing about this garbage for years. I got mad at them when they screwed up my Coca-Cola in the summer of 1985. I remember it well. I was finishing up college by taking, historical geology, the Synoptic Gospels, and Introduction to Eastern Philosophy. The first one of you that says something about basket weaving is going to piss me off. Not you, Agnes. You could never piss me off. She's hiding from the storm back here in the studio with me. She feels safer with her great protector alongside. Hush up, or I'll tell the Marcia Clark Marcia Cross story again. No, you don't look like Marcia Clark. That was when Roberto Gosueda decided that the best way for the Coca-Cola company to continue growing was to introduce new Pepsi-flavored Coke. And it was all just a quiet dodge for introducing high-fructose corn syrup into the mix and stop paying the money for sugar and thereby broaden, cane sugar, and thereby broaden the profit base of the Coca-Cola Corporation. And it worked. And every soft drink manufacturer in the country soon followed suit. And in that period from 1985 to 2010, diabetes has exploded in the United States. Juvenile diabetes, grown-up diabetes, leg-lopping diabetes, every kind of diabetes known to man. And it is at epidemic proportions in this country. But now this from Reuters. Headline, corn byproduct fructose literally fuels cancer cell growth, study finds. Pancreatic tumor cells use fructose to divide and proliferate, U.S. researchers said on Monday in a study that was not funded by the High Fructose Corn Syrup Manufacturers Association and therefore challenges the common wisdom, my ass, left hind foot, my old Aunt Matilda's back brace common wisdom, that all sugars are the same. Tumor cells fed both glucose and fructose used the sugars in two different ways. The team at the University of California, Los Angeles, who was not funded by the High Fructose Corn Syrup Manufacturers Association, found. They said their finding, published in the journal Cancer Research, which has no advertisements by the High Fructose Corn Syrup Manufacturers Association, may help explain other studies that have linked fructose intake with pancreatic cancer, one of the deadliest cancer types. Dr. Anthony Haney Dr. Anthony Haney of UCLA's Johnson Cancer Center and colleagues wrote, "These findings show that cancer cells can readily metabolize fructose to increase proliferation." That's science speak for this crap's bad for you. Continuing the quote, they have major significance for cancer patients given dietary refined fructose consumption and indicate that efforts to reduce refined fructose intake or inhibit fructose-mediated actions may disrupt cancer growth. And then the story, of course, notes Americans take in large amounts of fructose, mainly in high fructose corn syrup, a mix of fructose and glucose that is used in soft drinks, bread, and a range of other foods. Politicians, regulators, and health experts, many politicians having routinely been subsidized by the High Fructose Corn Syrup Manufacturers Association of America, Incorporated, have debated. I was paid to say it's good for you. Well, I wasn't paid to say it's good for you, and it's not good for you. Well, we have a debate. Huh? Politicians, regulators, health experts, and the industry have debated whether high fructose corn syrup and other ingredients have been helping make Americans fatter and less healthy. And I don't know about anybody else, but I haven't been debating that. I haven't been debating that even a little bit. Too much sugar of any kind not only adds pounds, but also a key culprit in diabetes, heart disease, and stroke, according to the American Heart Association. Several states, including New York and California, have weighed a tax on sweetened soft drinks to defray the cost of treating obesity-related diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. Oh, there they are, the American Beverage Association, whose members include Coca-Cola and Kraft Foods, makers of Kraft hot barbecue sauce slow-simmered in a 500-million-gallon vat with less than 2% of spices, have strongly and successfully opposed efforts to tax soda because, you know what, money is stronger than health, money is stronger than goodwill, money is stronger than science, money is stronger than... You get the idea. The industry has also argued that sugar is sugar. But now they find themselves in a position of not being able to argue that anymore because it's been proven on a number of different levels that sugar ain't sugar ain't sugar ain't sugar to sort of turn Gertrude Stein on her head. We know now that high fructose corn syrup, as mentioned on this program, is metabolized not in the intestine, but in the liver. And we also now know that high fructose corn syrup runs ablazing into the pancreas, where it helps contribute to one of the most horrifying cancers known to humankind, and the least likely to be cured of all cancers. The industry has also argued that sugar is sugar. Haney said his team found otherwise. They grew pancreatic cancer cells in lab dishes and fed them both glucose and fructose, and nope, none of the rats got cocaine. Tumor cells thrive on sugar, but they use the fructose to proliferate. Importantly, fructose and glucose metabolism are quite different. I think this paper has a lot of public health implications. Hopefully, at the federal level, there will be some effort to step back on the amount of high fructose corn syrup in our diets. But you see, and then finally, now the team hopes to develop a drug that might stop tumor cells from making use of fructose. No! That's the equivalent of Hawaii had a snake problem, so they brought in mongooses, so then they had a mongoose problem, so they had to bring in cats, which had to bring in dogs, and then they had to, you get the idea. We give America a disease through an entirely preventable but capital-driven process, and then we start working on a cure for the disease for the capital-driven process, when the simplest thing would simply be to stop inducing the disease-causing substance into the American diet. It's not like tobacco. It's not like it's just growing out there. The process by which we turn number 2 field grade Roundup Ready genetically modified corn into high fructose corn syrup is a process that is as complicated or more so than the fracturing of hydrocarbon compounds into propane, gasoline, oil, diesel fuel, what have you. And then finally, U.S. consumption of high fructose corn syrup went up 1,000% between 1970 and 1990, and God only knows where it is now. Researchers reported in 2004 in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. The obvious answer is to eliminate this crap from the American diet. And this isn't about me saying, oh, don't eat, no, you can't have no damn lard in your Bic-a-Bits. Make your Bic-a-Bits with lard. If you're stupid, make them with Crisco. You know, lots of nice trans fats. Oh, look, another manufacturing process as opposed to a real food. Michael Pollan should be, again, another one of those people that should be out there actually in government as opposed to being in academia, at least surviving. Michael Pollan should be advising the USDA, but you know who's advising the USDA? I'll tell you who's advising the USDA. The USDA is being advised by the American Beverage Association and the American High Fructose Corn Syrup Manufacturers Association, if there is one, and I'll be damn surprised if there's not. And therein lies our problem. The only thing that's going to get this crap off the market, remember, once upon a time, there was something on the market called cyclamates? Remember cyclamates? They were proven to be cancer-causing, and cyclamates went away. Do you remember hexachlorophene? I remember hexachlorophene. My mother ran like a woman possessed through the bathroom, getting all of the Dial brand soap out of the place once it was proven that hexachlorophene was a cancer causer. And hexachlorophene had to come out of all the soap. We can do these things, but I don't know if we can do it in 2010 in the era of the corporate citizen and the Citizens United decision. The only thing we have is the force of our dollars. And our dollars have, among other things, caused Ocean Spray to take the high fructose corn syrup out of their ruby red grapefruit beverage. And both Hunt's and Heinz are offering no high fructose corn syrup concoctions of their ketchups now. If we reject it, they lose. But it has larger implications. Please, I'm not trying to geek up the program or anything. It has larger implications because the reason that so much of America's farmland has been turned from ordinary edible crops into number two field grade Roundup ready genetically modified corn brought to you by Monsanto is because that's the kind of corn you use in making high fructose corn syrup, and it's also the kind of corn that you can send over to the CAFO, you know, the Cowschwitz, for feeding to the cattle. It's also really handy for making ethanol, which I suspect can probably be made on the same premises where they're fracturing out the high fructose corn syrup. Layers within layers within layers. Ripples in a pond. I'm told that Crisco did get the trans fats out of it 2 years ago. Hooray! See what good science married to consumer action can do? I still like my Bikabits made with lard. Big old cathead son of a guns with sausage gravy on Sunday morning. Yes, indeedly doodly. So enough of that. But I wanted to share that with you just as a sort of cautionary tale for America. And another proof that when you're at the horn, you're about 6 miles out in front of the curve. We'll meet you in the straightaway. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Yeah, some good news out of the great state of California.
Oh, isn't it wonderful news?
Well, it's one thing. I just want to read to you right quick why this is the case. And the California Constitution is different from a lot of state constitutions because of the rights that people have. It's even more stringent than the federal one. So it's Article 1, Declaration of Rights, Section 7B. A citizen or class of citizens may not be granted privileges or immunities not granted on the same terms to all citizens. Privileges or immunities granted by the legislature may be altered or revoked. So that's saying that, hello, you know, you can't subject a group to adverse rights that you wouldn't give or do to other groups. I mean, the strength of the legal protections are quite strong. So I was pretty sure they would have to do something about it just based on that section. Because it's saying, well, listen, you can't subject gays to some sort of detrimental harm, which is what Prop 8 did.
Well, it precisely did. And I wonder if, in listening to you read that, Sandra, I cannot help wondering if what you just described is the next tack in the ongoing assault on civil rights that is the fundamental evangelical right-wing conservative rat bastard movement.
Well, no, they're going to have to do some serious alterations in order to justify that, because what Judge Walker said was that orientation, you know, he basically threw that out the window, that orientation is some sort of deep behavioral choice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
It is, but no, to expand just a little bit, Sandra, you say they'll have to do some pretty serious monkeying around with the Constitution. They're more than willing to do that.
Oh, I know, but I mean, no, it's just sort of, it's interesting because, you know, because I know I've studied the California Constitution just for that reason, because it is quite strident in its protection of rights, and in order to amend it, you know, there's several ways of doing it. But anytime you're dealing with actual rights that are cited, like I just read, no, it can't really happen. Not like that. Not subjected to the tyranny of the majority, which is what happened here when that initiative passed.
Well, it most assuredly was. But have you turned on your local California television set or been near one or anything to see the exploding heads or anything?
No, you know, no, I haven't. You know, I just been sort of stuck on the computer. So, have you been looking at?
No, something? I'm just sure. I want to see coverage from outside the temple in Salt Lake City.
Oh yeah, no. Listen, I'm sure Newt Gingrich, you know, and the pride of het marriage himself will have something to say. And Fox, it's probably exploded in New York, right? The whole building.
Let's see. There it is. Reaction from Newt Gingrich.
Exactly.
Are you ready?
I am. What is it?
Judge Walker's ruling overturning Prop 8 is an outrageous disrespect for our Constitution. Since when is Newt Gingrich a Californian?
Exactly. Well, see, you knew it was going to be something hella stupid. What else?
And for the majority of people of the United States who believe marriage is the union of husband and wife, in every state of the union from California to Maine to Georgia, where the people have had a chance to vote, they've affirmed that marriage is the union of one man and one woman. Congress now has the responsibility to act immediately to reaffirm marriage as a union of one man and one woman at a time. Oh, no, he didn't say that. As our national policy.
No, it's just horrendous that he has the nerve, the absolute gall, to even talk about it. That pig who threw women overboard, people with cancer, mistresses. I mean, he's on his third one right now, ain't he?
Yeah, he is, and that's the one that he married after he was doing with her what Bill was doing with Monica.
Right. No. So it's just, I mean, that's
at the same time.
Point. It's just sort of ridiculous that these people, what's more disturbing is that the platform that these freaks are given, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. Today, Newt, remember, Newt is the intellectual center of the GOP. Even Howard Dean said that recently.
Was Howard Dean making a funny?
No, he said Newt Gingrich is definitely an intellectual, and the GOP is in dire need of some intellectualism.
Oh, God. Why? Because Newt Gingrich wrote a couple of history books revising history in the country?
If you stand on the sidewalk long enough with a sign saying, I'm a thinker, sooner or later, somebody's gonna endorse it. But
I know he has the nerve to be an ex-history professor, which is really disturbing to me. But anyway.
Yeah, at a community college in Gwinnett County, Georgia.
Oh, well, I didn't think it was, you know, Stanford.
No, that's Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, I didn't know where it was. I thought for some reason I thought it was in Athens.
But what's beautiful about this is he ties it in with another current issue. He is an intellectual. Today's notorious decision also underscores the importance of the Senate vote tomorrow on the nomination of Elena Kagan to the Supreme Court, because judges who oppose the American people are a growing threat to our society.
What?
I think that's along about when the mescaline was kicking in. I don't know.
You know, when you keep throwing this out like that earlier this week, that weird-ass Bachman, and now you have to translate for me with that. What the hell is he talking about?
I wish I apparently, if you read between the lines, he's afraid that Elena Kagan is going to get confirmed to the Supreme Court and run off to California and get married to some woman.
Well, I understand, but it's just so base with these people. That's all I'm saying. It's like, all right, so faggots and queers can get married, and I'm just going to tie this in from my Neanderthals to that bitch, because you know she's a dyke. So let me just bring her into the conversation.
Let's try. Yeah, because you got to work. You know, a smear is only as good as how far you can spread it.
Did they check her nails yet? Anyway.
Looking at that little half moon? Yeah.
I'm just sort of like, give me a break. And the thing about, she's going to be confirmed, but, I mean, it's no big cheering going on out here. I mean, I'm glad it's a woman on that level, but that's about it. And if she is queer, that's like a laugh riot. But she's some sort of reactionary, from what I can tell.
You know, there are a lot of progressives and liberals that aren't real crazy about it, and, you know, about her nomination. And, frankly, there's a couple of good reasons to be concerned. Just in the short, brief span of her time as Solicitor General of the United States. You know, we talked about that one night, Sandra. She stood up there and defended.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Her deference to out-of-control presidential power is a worry to me. And just sort of the kind of corporate-friendly, academic-slash, you know, the whole makeup. She's just, you know, she just seems to strike me as that careerist at all expense. Really, not much controversy, not many opinions per se, and this whole thing about her not letting the armed forces on—that's a bunch of BS. Because she did, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. The recruiting went up. But you know, and the other funny thing out of the Kagan thing, since we've sort of shifted gears a little bit, is that the National Republican Rifle Association, Sandra, has chosen on the Kagan nomination to keep their powder dry. In other words, they're not going to mount a big old massive money spend an email campaign against her, even though she wants to take away your guns. They're not going to mount a campaign because they're afraid of getting steamrolled and losing prestige.
No, that's because she won't. That's the thing. It's like, you know, this isn't any sort of, you know, progressive, you know, that we want. You know, to me, I just think it's just going to move the court to the right, actually, is what I see, just based on the presidential issues alone.
How long until Vaughn Walker starts getting death threats, do you think?
Well, yeah, you know, that's just sort of a given.
Because, I mean, it was within a matter of minutes that the threats started flowing in to Judge Bolton when she ruled on SB 1070 preliminarily.
Well, no, but, exactly. I mean, but it's just so irrational because his argument is, I mean, well, I suppose they'll appeal it now to, what, the
Ninth Circuit.
Ninth? Well, have fun with that.
That's what I was kind of beating on a little bit ago, is that they better go gently on this, because after the Ninth does whatever it does, the appeal goes to the Supreme Court, and if the Supreme Court gets in the business of overturning California propositions, oopsie, there's a whole lot of stuff that can go sideways for a lot of conservatives in a very short period of time, isn't there?
No, exactly, like Prop 13, so maybe they should just go ahead. Because Lord knows we need to get rid of that prop. No, it'd be interesting to see what goes on with this. But in the meantime, I think they can't stop people from getting married.
I was looking into the chat room before I started, and Lottie, our chat room moderator, was in there, and he said that they had that the Wingnuts already had a stay on the ruling.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It wasn't automatic, but there was a stay there. That they got almost. Yeah, Lottie's saying there right now. No, there's a stay in place. So nobody's gonna. Elena Kagan or anybody else can't run out and get married just yet.
Okay, so yeah, it's gonna get appealed. Right. Okay, so it's gonna have to go all the way up to the Supreme Court. Well, you know, the Supreme Court don't seem to be too concerned about anything except for corporate business things. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe they will decide that.
And that's exactly it. You know, if it should happen to make it to the Supreme Court, you know how it goes. John Roberts will place a phone call to Goldman Sachs and ask them if they've got a position on it. And somebody at Goldman Sachs will tell them that they've taken the short side on prop hate losing. And John Roberts will come out and the decision will go accordingly.
Well, I mean, I can't remember what is the one in Texas that overturned the Lawrence v. Texas?
Yeah.
I don't know who was sitting. That was Rehnquist, right?
Yeah, that was the Rehnquist court.
And even Rehnquist is so much better. I can't believe I'm saying this, than the Roberts court. So I don't know.
And Scalia and Thomas, by the way, are still pissed off about that.
Oh no, they was ready to. Yeah, I read that whole decision. Then their rendering of it was just frightening. So I could see. Yeah, I guess I should sort of hold my breath on this because they could use this to set the some horrible precedent where they will lock gay people in second class citizenry, I guess.
Well, I hope
maybe they can overturn.
And I think the upshot is that even though this decision has been rendered, it is the process is something that is far from over.
Oh no, it is. But you know, I have to say that at least the judge in question is looking at it constitutionally from California's point of view. Because I mean, that thing I read, you see how it is. You know, they are subjecting a population. Yeah, it's incredible. So it's so obvious how wrong it is. But yeah, I guess I'll wait with you. But there was also other good news. The Senate cleared the way for the aid to the states.
Yes.
$26 billion.
Yeah, 38 Republicans still voting against cloture.
Yeah, whatever.
I know. It's hard not to have that response.
It's incredible that whole problem. But I was sort of a bit taken aback that they had, you know, that Reid had figured out some way of clearing that, because that was just looking like it was going to be disastrous.
Well, it's not like it was some sort of grand strategy. He got Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe on board. That was it. He got Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe on board, and David Vitter didn't vote.
Okay, well, okay. Well, however, I just, like I said, at this point, any kind of movement is always almost shocking at this point. And the mystery oil spill is still over with, I see.
Actually, no. It's not still over with. I got an email earlier today from my buddy Jerry Cope, and he's been doing some great reporting from down that way. He has an article over at Huffington Post today, and I'm furiously searching for it because the power outage took down the computer as well. Give me just a second here, Sandra. I can find it. It's not going to be that complicated. There it is. Yeah. It's at Huffington Post by Jerry Cope. It is entitled The Crime of the Century. It's Jerry Cope and Charles Hambleton. And he's responding to these claims that move along, nothing to see here. This is not the oil-covered droid you were looking for. With a great deal of data showing that it is anything but over. with some pretty stunning and sickening photos along the way as well.
Well, no, because there's no way after what we've been following, because if you've been paying attention to it, you know, more than the average bear, there is no way that the resolution can be like this. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It doesn't make no sense.
They're calling it Mississippi Canyon 252. The reason BP has gone to such great lengths to hide the devastation caused by the irresponsible drilling operations and blowout at Mississippi Canyon 252 is financial. Every death that results from the oil spill has a cash value, whether animal or human. Images of dead animals are difficult to spin in the media, and they resonate across all demographics. BP also has a strong interest in maintaining a business-as-usual model for the beach resort communities along the Gulf Coast that have been economically devastated. The only sharks circling the Gulf waters now are based on land. And earlier in the piece, he says, while they're telling you one thing, he says, to judge, and I thought of you immediately when I read this earlier today, he says, to judge from most media coverage, the beaches are open, the fishing restrictions being lifted, and the Gulf resorts open for business in a healthy, safe environment. He said, we, along with Pierre LeBlanc, spent the last few weeks along the Gulf Coast from Louisiana to Florida, and the reality is distinctly different. The coastal communities of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida have been inundated by the oil and toxic dispersant corrects at 9,500. You know, that sounds like some sort of a shock collar, corrects at 9,500. And the entire region is contaminated. The once pristine white beaches that have been subject to intense cleaning operations now contain the oil dispersant contamination to an unknown, and this is important, to an unknown depth. The economic impacts potentially exceed even the devastation of a major hurricane like Katrina. The adverse impacts on health and welfare of human populations are increasing every minute of every day, and the long-term effects are potentially life-threatening.
Right, and the Ninth Ward is back like it was before. I mean, come on now. It's just more of the same, but it's even more disturbing, though, because of the sheer amount of toxins that are just, and these people are just going to pack up and be like, oh, well, you know, when you start sprouting two heads and dropping dead at 40, it'll be what? Your fault, right?
Right. Just like the people who have lived, not to sort of cross-pollinate different topics on the program or anything, but just like the people who have been, you know, they're fit, they get out, they exercise, they do everything right, they weigh underneath the actuarial tables for their weight, and they look up and they go, damn, where did I get diabetes? And, you know, it's the damned high fructose corn syrup that's been pumped into their bodies for 25 years or 15 years, and, you know, too bad 25 years, and too bad if you don't like it.
Right, I mean, and the thing is I heard, you know, it just sent chills up me, and I heard Obama talking about, oh, we won't abandon you. Where have we heard that before?
Several different places.
Well, just sort of it's just kind of like that poor region, you know. I mean, it all sounds good and well, but it's really hard to take seriously. Remember that speech with the eerie lights and the blue shirt that Bush was wearing?
Yeah.
Right, and I don't mean to lump Obama into that, but it's just kind of, yeah, dude, they haven't even put the money in the escrow account yet, so.
They haven't?
No.
So the boot is not really on the neck?
No, last I heard that account, it still ain't happened yet. So, you know, the devil is in the detail, I guess, and by the way, Pat Robinson is suing to stop the New York City mosque.
Oh.
Anyway,
how am I going to get through prayer meeting Wednesday without putting the straw in the communion wine with things like that, Sandra?
Yeah, well, that one is, you know, that looks like it needs more investigation because that freak, Farwell kicked it. Isn't Oral Roberts dead?
Yes, mercifully.
Okay, this guy, when? Oh, Lord, when?
Well, you know, he's out there leg pressing 700,000 pounds because of his protein milkshakes, and his face looks great because of his Sea of Galilee mud mask.
Oh, God, that whole thing when he was pressing, wasn't it 2,400 pounds or something really?
And it's all because of my energy shake.
Oh, gee. Anyway, that headline kind of caught me off guard. I thought, what? Why is he, you know, what in the world is he doing?
What he's doing is ginning up more money from the credulous.
Oh, Oh, boy, I guess. Okay, listen, I'll let you move along.
All right, thanks, Sandra. Yeah. You have a good night.
You too, bye.
Bye now. God, you can hear the pitch, can't you? My friends, we need oh, brother and sister, we need you to send money. Send money now. We've got this lawsuit against Satan and his emissaries from the Muslims, and lawsuits don't come cheap. Send what you can. Send it right now. All operators are standing by on the prayer hotline. Whew. Yeah, I know. And let's see. Onward we go. Or not. Well, it's about 11 minutes after 7 o'clock. Time to take a little break. And, you know, here on the horn, we take requests from time to time. And Juanita asked especially for this tune. So it seems a bit, and it seems somehow appropriate. She said, this is how I feel most of the time. And it seems appropriate under the circumstances. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice, Thunderstorm Edition. You're listening to the horn. Light them up, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We'll be back.
Taking in again, wrapped around the finger. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Just to follow up a little bit here at 18 minutes past the hour, almost halfway through the program for this evening, the thunderstorm seems to have passed mercifully. Just to follow up with a little bit of data, I got an email from News Ninja Susan, who was out there burning up the series of tubes to find this for me. Currently, as in right now, more than 17,000 people in the United States are waiting for liver transplants. According to the United Network for Organ Sharing, about 5,300 liver transplantations were performed in the United States in 2002. 5,300 in 2002. Those are the number of transplants. The waiting list in 2010 is 17,000. Says Susan, enough said. Which got me to wondering. I wanted to see incident statistics for pancreatic cancer. Thank you, Susan. And so during the break, I went and had me a little look. And estimated new cases and deaths from pancreatic cancer in the United States in 2010. New cases, not last year's cases, new cases diagnosed, 43,140. Of pancreatic cancer deaths numbered at 36,800. And just in the short amount of time that I was able to look around during the break, you may remember this from a while back. Just in the pancreatic cancer is pernicious and damn near incurable, unless you can buy yourself a liver transplant at the University of Memphis and happen to run a corporation that sells highly socially desirable computers. As it turns out, pancreatic cancer is on the rise in the U.S. It is not holding steady. And for years, the research on pancreatic cancer, they looked at everything. What could possibly be causing it? And they said, oh, coffee. Coffee. Drinking coffee. But they couldn't quite make that one stick. And I can't help wondering how much of a struggle it was for the researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, to actually get to do this study on high fructose corn syrup. And I am sure that the high fructose corn syrup industry is in full-on crisis mode, and the phones are ringing off the hooks at congressional offices all over Capitol Hill. Wow, this is junk science. This is probably some vegetarian. Huh? Wait, I thought corn was a vegetable. Well, you know how they are. If it wasn't grown lovingly in the corn stalk, petted every day by a... And you know how they are. And grown without any fertilizer or any civilization about the corn. I wonder if the sweat has trickled downhill to Monsanto yet. But that is an astonishing... And I don't mean to hammer on this as opposed to any other news story this evening, but that's an astonishing piece of information. High fructose corn syrup is a primary delivery system of fructose to the American public. And pancreatic cancer, it is literally fuel. It is literally fuel. For pancreatic cancer cells. Just like regular food is fuel for your body, the stuff that they sweeten Coca-Cola and Pepsi and 7-Up and Dr. Pepper and virtually every soft drink on your grocery store shelf with that stuff, just as they do that, in some segment of the population, some percentage of the population, every bottle of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, Sprite, the Orange Crush, what have you, that comes off the shelf is an active contributor to some family's agony, misery, and death. And if some of you are thinking this, I want to let you know that I'm ahead of the curve on it, as usual. And I recognize that there is a certain degree of hypocrisy in me talking about high fructose corn syrup with me being a smoker. I know what is involved. I know the risks involved with smoking. I'm aware of it every time I light up. I'm also aware that I'm an addict, and I tried the electronic cigarette, and it didn't work for me. It's a nice stopgap, but it didn't work for me. It didn't help me stop. It's just not the same thing. But I'm glad that it works for a lot of other people. I'm really, really happy to know that. But in 2010, cigarette smoking and snuff rubbing or dipping, or as the genteel ladies of the Victorian era would have done, snorted it, that's something that we know the risks of. And once addicted, we have to deal with those constant risks. But the child who unscrews the cap on a bottle of Coca-Cola does not know that they are pouring cancer fuel into their bodies. 43,140 new cases of pancreatic cancer this year. 43,140 pancreases fueled by the unbridled lust for holy profit at Coca-Cola, at PepsiCo. Yeah. And it makes me furious to think that, yeah, their lobbyists will be running around reassuring bought and paid for congressmen and senators that high fructose corn syrup manufacturing means jobs. If you take this stuff out of the diet, if you stop fueling all that cancer, we won't have jobs. Gotta have jobs. Now, this just in from Sandra. Bob, shut the hell up about Steve Jobs. Hilarious. But the idea that this research is going to fuel a cure for making pancreatic cancer cells stop fueling themselves with high fructose corn syrup when the best thing in the world to do would be to just get the high fructose corn syrup out of the diet? If this thing gets picked up by right-wing radio, I guarantee, well, the food Nazis will be, my friends, the liberal food Nazis will be trying to take away the high fructose corn syrup and your beloved Daily Pepsi. And that's the way it is with these liberals. They don't want you to have the freedom to choose to fuel your pancreatic cancer. You have individual freedoms, my friends. And if we take the high fructose corn syrup out of your Pepsi's going to cost $10 a can. And that's the way the liberals of the nanny state want it. No. This liberal would like to see families not ripped asunder, many of them uninsured, by something as hideous and devastating as cancer, when it's a cancer that is utterly, at least to some degree, preventable. Barbecue sauce, cranberry juice cocktail, tomato soup, ketchup, the bread at your local Subway, the meats at your local Subway, the mass-produced Smithfield meats, I'm sure, are just loaded with this crap. And, you know, if it wasn't for those liberals that created labeling laws, you'd never even know you were being poisoned. You would never even know. Think about that. Because I assure you, labeling laws, and I'm guessing here, I don't have a fact checker handy. Labeling laws, I am quite certain, were not a repig-licking idea. I'm sure it was fought tooth and toenail by the Repiglicans and their corporate allies back in the day when food labeling was first considered. With, of course, the food industry screaming, "We'll go out of business, prices will shoot through the roof, it'll cost us so much in ink to produce those food labels on the labels and the nutrition information, we can't possibly sell our product in a competitive marketplace, oh Jesus, our stock prices are going to fall." Do you doubt me? I don't think so. I doubt you doubt me. Marty writing in and saying, "Oh, for the Limbaugh Feliacs and Beckians, just triple the high fructose corn syrup in their Pepsi." Subway? Glad I like Togo's. I don't know what Togo's is. That must be a California thing. But I'll bet you'll find high fructose corn syrup in their bread, too. If it comes to them frozen and they proof it and then bake it, I'll bet you there's high fructose corn syrup in it. I will bet you. I will bet you. I will bet you. But enough of me. Let's talk about you. It's half past the hour, halfway through the program. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Doing good. Hey, is this Gary?
Yeah.
Hey, good to talk to you, my friend.
Hey, how are you? Okay, great. You talking about the corn syrup, man? That's my favorite subject, man. You know, right? You know, even during football season, you know.
I somehow don't think you're kidding.
50-50. I am very diligent about not, you know, the fructose, because I'm very much been aware of it for years, because I had a friend of mine who was addicted to, like, not smoking, but, like, grape soda. and he lost his teeth at a very, very early age just because he was drinking that sugar.
And you know, another side effect of this stuff is that it operates by virtue of the fact that it's metabolized differently. When you've had enough sugar as metabolized through your intestinal tract, it sends a signal to your brain that says enough. Mm-hmm. Well, when you do it with high fructose corn syrup, because it's metabolized differently, that signal never gets sent to your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very it's something that is not talked about a lot, or people just not educated on it. You know, I was talking to an aunt of mine. I was telling her, I said, you know, I've been buying this wheat bread that, you know, I thought was all, you know, great for me. And then one day I was walking past the store and I saw one of them say, no fructose corn syrup. I said, what? I went back and I started looking at my old brand and I was like, oh, no, it, you know, it had fructose in it. So now I make sure I get this one brand that I know that doesn't have it.
And that's the thing, Gary. It's bread. I mean, most of us at some point in time, I would suspect, have made bread, rolls, something like that. And at no point in time did any of us ever pour fructose into it.
Well, it's the honey wheat, you know. You get that wheat bread. If you get the honey wheat, you still have to really be diligent.
Yeah, well, and that's the point. You know, like with the Kraft barbecue sauce, sitting next to my Kraft hot made-in-a-vat barbecue sauce that whose primary ingredient is high fructose corn syrup was Kraft honey barbecue sauce. And you know what?
Companies can't take that margin hit, though. You know, they just can't do it because they're so pressed at Wall Street. You know, Wall Street, you got to have those returns. So it's like they just...
Yeah, even if it happens on the rotting innards of America, they got to have those returns. They got to have that quarterly profit-to-loss ratio, you know, in proper balance.
Yeah, so I don't see any strong educational push coming unless it's some kind of grassroots thing, but that's not going to happen because people in general are not concerned about their health until they're sick. And it's just the nature of Americans. We're not Europeans. I mean, we don't gear that way. I mean, I hate to sound cynical, but that's just a fact. We have a burn and die kind of strategy. We have to get burned by something. We have to almost like destroy the ocean before we realize, hey, you know, maybe we should, you know, just how Americans are, man, you know. Been living with it for a long time.
Yeah, what, are you saying, Gary, that the operative motto for the American so-called consumer should be act in haste, repent in leisure?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess maybe that's the way I put it. I probably would say it in a different way, but that's your way of saying it. I have a different way of saying it, but yeah.
And I suspect your way of saying it would probably be a little more to the point, but that's why I'm such a troublesome person.
Well, you read too much, man. You read too much. I'm not educated like you.
It's my only solace,
Gary.
I
don't have those words that are swimming in my head that are just swimming to come out at the opportune time.
And, you know, and trust me, it's a torment. My dreams are hell. You know, I have nine-syllable dreams as well.
No, but I'm just picking at you, man.
I know.
Brett Favre, what's up?
Brett Favre. Did you see the troubling little release that came out today about his dirty pictures?
No, I didn't hear that. You know, I've been kind of off the grid today. Today was like my day off.
David in Tennessee sent this along to me from Deadspin.com.
Okay.
Brett Favre once sent me penis pictures, not a love story. I don't know if you followed the Jets enough to know who wow, she's pretty. Jen Sturger is. I'd never seen her before this, but I want to see more of her. She was part of the Jets football sideline crew or whatever, and she said somewhere along the way that Brett Favre had been had at one point sent her cell phone photos of his penis.
Does she work for ESPN?
I don't know who she's with now.
I think I may know who you're talking about, because I know there's a, because you know I'm a Dolphin fan, and you know, so I do know obviously a lot about the Jets. But I know there's this one reporter that works for the Jets, and I hate her because she's a Jet lover. I mean, she's very anti-Miami, so it may be the same person. I'm just wondering, maybe that's her, but it'd be very interesting.
Really,
but
really, anyway. Really pretty brunette with a million-dollar smile and. Let's see. She's...
Yeah, I can't remember exactly if she's brunette or blonde. I remember seeing her one time on a newscast, and I know she said something I just thought was kind of out of lines for a commentator toward my team.
Mm-hmm.
So, So that's why you mentioned her. I said, oh, maybe that's her. But anyway, don't bring up the jets around me, man. I hate
it. Yeah, but sorry. Let's see. No, let's see. She's been on the Daily Line on the V Channel.
Okay, well.
Yeah, but yeah, these are really creepy photographs. And this is the best part. As an addendum to the story, it ends by saying, one thing that's notable is this. It turns out Brett watched last year's Super Bowl at home in Mississippi. He didn't watch it alone, however. According to one source, he watched the Saints miraculously defeat the Colts in the company of one special guest. Care to guess?
No, I'm dumb. Tell me.
Tiger Woods. Wonder what those guys talked about, says the article, and that's the end of it. What is it? You know, what is it with cell? You know, I've got a cell phone with a camera on it, Gary. I have no urge to take photographs of any portion of my anatomy. And with no urge, I certainly, even if I took the pictures, I would have no urge to email them.
Well, I played football in high school, and I know, you know, you used to always be in the showers. I know now if I was playing now, there's no way I would go back in there again naked, just because, like you said, people are just taking pictures everywhere. It's like now you definitely have to almost be like private. You just can't go anywhere now. There's cameras everywhere. So this whole story, you never know how it's rigged up, you know?
And, you know, it's kind of funny you had mentioned the having played football thing. Ferg has just started his ninth grade. He's just started practice ahead of the beginning of his ninth grade year. And apparently on the first day of practice, all the sophomores, juniors, and seniors hazed all the freshmen. And if it was done in any other circumstance, it would qualify as felony sexual abuse.
Yeah, they used to do it to us, kind of, you know. We were, you know, played ball. You know, you always kind of wonder what, you know. And then, you know, I know, you always know there were a couple guys, you know, okay, you know, whatever. I'm not, but, you know, I have no problem with it, but, you know, there's always a couple guys, but, you know, we're talking, you know.
Yeah,
years ago,
cavemen, Neanderthals.
Like you know, okay, all right, are you playing? Are you real? You know, what's going on here? You know? So women really don't know what goes on in the locker room. They really don't have a clue.
And some of us guys don't much want to know either.
Yeah.
No, I remember.
Well, you know,
but I remember the day too. But
a game.
Yeah, but when I was playing high school football very poorly, it wasn't so much that as, you know, swirlies and you know, rat-tailed wet towel ends. And those little son of a guns hurt. But I don't remember anything involving anyone slapping anyone with their penis.
No, but I saw some stuff that I'm not going to.
Yeah, and see, the show is quickly devolving, Gary, because I think that's the fifth time I've said that word in 5 minutes, and, you know, it doesn't bode well.
Yeah, but that was my purpose of coming on, just to bring the show right down to its low point. But, you know, you're already kind of swimming at the bottom because you're talking about a fructose concert, which just has a very low radar thing. But, you know, I mean, I think it is an important topic, though, because, you know, this fructose and this diabetes, particularly with African-Americans, they're saying, I think it is now, they're saying within the next, 5-10 years, diabetes will overtake cancer as the, you know, leading cause leading health concern in America. And it comes down to just, for the most part, like you said, it's fructose. I mean,
isn't that going to be great for the profit to loss ratio of the insulin manufacturers? That'll be great for business, and there'll be lots of jobs.
But think about it.
God, I'm a cynical soul.
Think about it. No, but I'm thinking about it. Think about how much money has been going to cancer research and all this other stuff. Diabetes is about to overtake it, and all they have to do is just make a law that this substance is banned under, you know, certain conditions. You're going to have to find another. And it's probably another solution that they could find, or accelerant or whatever, or extender or whatever people in chemical engineering call it or whatever, to get the same, something similar, to stretch it out to what they still need for their project. But they got something in place, I believe, that already works, and they're just not going to change. So I think we do need government intervention. I don't care what these Republicans or conservatives say. I mean, it's just so pro-business. It's like they never think there's a point where you just say, what is best long-term for the country? I mean, it's like it's everything has to be like business. It's, you know, they're very pro when it comes to war. Now, when it's a war, it's like, yeah, everything, America first, America
first. Oh, yeah, and we can have deficits as far as the eye can see as long as the deficits are propping up, death and destruction and misery for some bunch of brown people 8,000 miles away. But on the other hand, I don't know if you noticed this or not, Missourians went to the polls yesterday, Gary.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they resoundingly rejected Obamacare. Mm. Now, and the thing is, the people...
Take them all off.
You know what? I'm right with you. It was Proposition C in Missouri. Yeah, kick them all off. It passed overwhelmingly. It wasn't even narrow. Let's see. State Senator Jane Cunningham, Repiglican of Chesterfield, said,
"The citizens of the Show Me State don't want Washington involved in their health care decisions. I've never seen anything like it. Citizens wanted their voices to be heard."
On what? That they want to continue being raped by the pharmaceutical companies?
I really haven't been watching too much of the political spectrum as much as I normally do, mainly because I just think there's too much overly focused right now on Obama and the White House, and I just think that they just seem like that's the solution for us. And America has a lot of, granted the government could do, definitely a lot, but America, got to me, has a lot of sins across the board that's going to be beyond the president. You look at these companies, for the last 10, 20 years, just even since Clinton was in office. So it's kind of, to me, it's like, we vote for these things and these changes and all these other things, but at the core, we got a bunch of Americans who say, well, certain people shouldn't have rights, Just a certain group are still like in 1935,
Okay, yeah, and here's a question for you, Gary.
Obama coming out and changing these people's mind. So this, what should Obama do? This is in their heart, man. This is what these people want to do.
Well, you've probably seen this business about the Republicans wanting to overturn the 14th Amendment and so forth.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, here's a semi-rhetorical question for you, Gary. How loopy has the Republican Party become when the guy who calls them out for this 14th Amendment lunacy is Alan Keyes?
Oh, man. Oh, my goodness.
Today at a Tea Party Express meeting of so-called African-American conservative leaders in D.C., the Think Progress folks sought their thoughts on the 14th Amendment, and Alan Keyes said the following. "The 14th Amendment is not something that one should play with lightly. I noticed finally that Lindsey Graham used the term, as people have carelessly done over the years, referring to the 14th Amendment as something that has to do with birthright citizenship and that we should get rid of birthright citizenship. Now let me see, if birthright citizenship is not a birthright, then it must be a grant of the government. And if it's a grant of the government, then it could be curtailed in all the ways that fascists and totalitarians always want to. I am here to say that is the first time ever, Gary, ever, that Alan Keyes has said anything that has resounded inside my little eardrums as non-Martian. That actually reads like English.
Well, he's an idiot. I remember the first time I saw him years ago on that station when he was in Denver. And he was just—I just saw him on the screen. He was talking. I didn't have the—I guess it was on a radio station. Didn't even have a microphone up. I just saw an image of him on a TV screen, and I was just watching him talk, And it's like I could see something was wrong with him.
You could literally see through his skull and see the bats flapping around.
Yeah, I couldn't hear anything. I didn't know what his position was, but I just said something is wrong with the TV. That's what kind of.
And that's precisely my point. The man is crazier than a sprayed roach.
Well,
he's the one, and the crazy guy is the one who's saying that Lindsey Graham, John McCain, John Kyle, and the rest of that the weirdo gang of unrepentant Confederates that they're the ones with a problem. That's how loopy and loony the Republican Party is now.
Well, Keyes was involved a lot with that. Back when they was making gay marriage and an issue, a couple of years ago. When it hit another fever pitch, he was out. I remember he gave a speech in D.C. Where I think it was like Focus on the Family or whatever out there, and he was very much, against that. So, I don't know why. Maybe he's just a constitutionalist. capitalist or whatever, but he, I think he would know that that human beings have rights. So, I mean, why would he be against, you know, marriage? I mean, it's not this whole thing with marriage again. It's not their God's law, whatever their God is or whatever, this and this and that. It's the law of this country. You know what I mean? So, therefore, they can't, like, we're not a, you know, a Sharia law here. I mean, we're not a theocracy. We're a democracy. It's based on all this. So, to me, the Republicans continually show that they really don't have a moral code. They don't have a moral agenda. It's, when it all comes down to Bob, it always comes back to some corporation or some guy sitting behind some car pulling the puppet strings for them. I mean, so... I mean, it's almost laughable.
Okay, so let me then put this question to you, Gary.
You know,
what corporate interest could there possibly be in denying people citizenship based on being born in the U.S.?
I think it's a chess move.
Does it create? Does it broaden the base of ready, cheap, available labor who can be worked at substandard wages? Could that be it?
I think they're more concerned about getting more control of the Congress with the Republicans than that long term. So they would, you know what I'm saying? They would sacrifice bunt. You know what I mean? I think that's all it is. I think that's pretty clear. That's all they want. They just want to make sure the Republicans get back into a certain level of. I mean, they know the rage against the machine is happening. They feel it. I mean, people are upset. They're lucky that the Tea Party haven't turned on them yet. But they know that they just can't continue to beat people down or whatever. And expect that, you know, sooner or later, even the Tea Party people are going to figure it out. So I think this is just another one of these little wedge issues that they're going to throw up just enough to get Republicans back in power. And then, you know, after that, they'll say, well, you know what? I don't really have a problem with the Mexicans. I mean, why didn't they change all these laws when they were in power? They didn't do it when they were in power.
Oh, no.
Why didn't they go after the Mexicans when they were in power? So they're not really against it. You know,
why didn't they stop abortion when they were in power? Because these are the kind of issues that bring their little brain dead 20 percenters scurrying out from behind the baseboards, running to the polls to go and vote on some sort of hate based election issue.
Yeah, and I think they're going to overplay their hand by trying to get into this now because more people are focused on jobs. I kind of disagree with some people that people think that the Democrats are going to lose that. I don't think so. I think that I feel strongly that. I do think we'll have a double dip economy, but I do think the Democrats will hold on at least to one of the branches. And obviously they'll keep the presidency. But I actually personally, people don't agree with me, but I think they're going to keep the House too. I really do. I think Republicans are just right now, they're so pitiful. They're just so pitiful.
Well, okay, let me ask you another question.
I mean, look at Sharon Angle. I mean, she's literally just giving Harry Reid his seat back.
Yeah, I saw that thing earlier, well, last night I think it was, where Sharon Angle said, in fact, it was Chris sent it to me on my Facebook page, the story of Sharon Angle where she complained, I want the media to like me and ask me the questions I want the media to ask me so we can get people to go to SharonAngle.com and donate.
But you heard what she said, that new thing, right? Well, I don't know if it's new. It's
well, it goes back to April. Yeah, it goes back to April. And, social welfare programs are an affront to God because they violate the First Commandment. You know, thou shalt have no other God before me.
Yeah, she said that what Obama, was trying to do is that he's trying to make government our God.
Yeah, that's the whole point. She said all of this, all this creation, this creation of dependency on government makes the government our God, and that violates the First Commandment.
I mean, I know Harry must be... Reed must be somewhere tap dancing.
Oh, Harry's sure. Somewhere. Harry's gone to ground, and he's his entire campaign staff is just, Harry, say nothing. Just let her keep talking.
And Charlie Crist seems like he's having,
a little resurgence?
Epiphany. I don't want to say an epiphany, but... I don't know, man. I don't think Rubio is going to be able to take it. So, and it depends on if they cut some kind of deal with Meeks. The Democrats say, look, you kind of need to back down a little bit. We need to get Charlie in there. I don't know, man. I say, you know, because I think those two races are seminal because, you know, obviously I don't think they're going to get sent anyway, but I think I just had this feeling just knowing these corporations, they're going to have to start hiring at some point. And I'm seeing now that July jobs report like it's going to come out better than it was. If that's the case, and they're hiring really well in, you know, in July, and if it picks up, I mean, it's not going to be well, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, summer is usually when it's really, really, you know, and I don't know. I think that somehow we're going to get, like, maybe some good job numbers in October and in September. And that may be just enough for the Democrats to say, see, a glimmer of hope is coming. That's what they got to run with. You can't come out and say, oh, we've done everything. But say, we got to keep going in the direction. Remember where we came from. But you know, the light is ahead of us. We're going there. If they can just make a strong campaign for that, I don't think the Republicans can win. I just don't think. I mean, at some point, you have to tell me, what are you going to do this
day? Is it possible to scare a little bit of life into the Democratic leadership in the House and Senate, Gary? In other words, if let's say Harry Reid loses two or three Senate seats, but he's still got a majority, might that spur him to do something? You know, because they're going to, if Harry's still got power when the new Congress comes in, there are those in the Senate who want to really, really significantly revisit the way the Senate does business and how the filibuster works.
Yeah. I think that would happen, and be great because that'll go into Obama, hopefully, a second term, and you know that's when he really can you know do some things, and you know I just think people got it mixed up wrong. You know, I hope I'm right on this. But I think one thing I think is Democrats eventually we're going to have to just buckle down and say, okay, all right, these are Democrats we got. You know, I mean, I guess I'm just, you know, how I am. You know, obviously I'm I'm still pro Democrat. As many are, and you know, I have my issues with them, but I think that we got to really be diligent and make sure that the Republicans do not get back in power, because that would be really, that'd be a setback, man. Because if they get in power, all we're going to hear about is Obama's not born in America. There's going to be an investigation. Why wasn't he in Spain with his wife? Where was? You know what I mean? It's going to be stupid stuff. You know that we don't really, you know. We can't go through that right now, man. We just can't. So anyway, but that's my little rant for the night and my little thoughts. Let you go because I know you got about 1,000 callers waiting.
Well, you know, there's only six lines on this bank, but they fill up quick. Good to hear from you, Gary.
All right, man.
You take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Good to hear from Gary calling from the D.C. area. Onward we roll. You know, lines are open, 877-443-2366 and 304-658-3333. Light them up if you want to. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I had speakerphone on. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
This is a great honor for me. You are one of the guys that I listen to all the time because of Mike Malloy's suggestion to listen to you.
Well, thank you very kindly. May I have a first name, please?
My name is John. I come from the great state of Maine.
Wow, good to hear from you, John.
And I'm replying to this Buell guy that lives up in Southwest Harbor.
Okay.
I am a Mainer that has lived here all my life. I'm not quite sure what his issue was, but I'd like to tell you about what most Maine people are, and we certainly hardworking blue-collar people, you know, for the most part.
That was always my understanding.
And I want to ask you, is there any question that you would have about what you think about the state of Maine?
No, I've always loved Mainers because in many ways they remind me, and this is not an insult, they remind me of coming from many of the same sort of working mindsets as the folks I grew up with. If you listen to a Maine accent, it is not that far from a Southern accent. Because it's the same people. You know, I know my Civil War history, and I know the folks that Maine sent on the Union side. We're coming, you know, the same poor working folks coming off the farms as the Confederacy sent to its lines. No. I'm not a that was not an anti-Maine screed by any sense of the word.
It wasn't taken that way, honestly.
Oh, I'm glad of that.
listen, my father was born in Searcy, Arkansas, okay? He lived through the Depression. His parents were sharecroppers. He came up to work at, actually, Bath Iron Works when he had an opportunity in the 30s and settled up here and bought a home and, you know, worked for almost 30 years at the shipyard, okay? And I had, he raised a family with a woman he married up here. We had five children. He had five children, excuse me. And two of them went on to work in the shipyard. And I have a older sister that's a nurse. I'm a carpenter. And unfortunately, two of those that had worked in that shipyard have just recently passed away within the last 2 years.
Wow. So I take it, did you go and have a look at the John Buell article?
Well, actually, I have not because it was in passing. I heard a podcast yesterday, actually, when I turned you on. And, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, we live up here in an area where it's the most beautiful part of the world. We have coastal, and you get inland. You have most beautiful lakes you can imagine, you know, when you go inland. I'm going to say within 20 miles of the coast is all inland and wooded and just beautiful lakes. And, you know, working as a carpenter on the coast, you see areas that are just so full of sailboats. It's like, my God, who could possibly have all these sailboats, you know? You know, if you live in, you know, the southern part of the state and just pepper the coast.
Well, the only thing I would ask of you is that do me a favor when you've got a chance, just go to, and this is sort of by the way of the thing that was kind of bugging me about the Buell piece was this idea that everything can be compromised upon and that there's always room to work with the other side, when in fact, you know, anybody who observes this stuff realizes that every time we try to compromise with the other side, we end up losing our shorts. Do me a favor, when you've got a minute, go to ilovemountains.org, just like it sounds, ilovemountains.org, and there's a thing there where you plug in your zip code. And when you plug in your zip code, you don't have to give any personal information or anything, but when you plug in your zip code and you hit go, what you'll find out is what your local electric company's connection is to what's going on down here in Appalachia, namely mountaintop removal. And I think you'll be
totally aware of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I followed you ever since I was turned on you from Mike Malloy. And I tell you what, I can't imagine what your state used to look like, you know, from the time that you were young to what it looks like now. Because I'm sure there are areas that you've been to that totally devastated because of what has happened to you. It must be horrible.
It's shocking. And the whole point is that if we become aware outside of Appalachia what's going on, then we can start rattling the bars in our various state legislatures. For instance, even in North Carolina and Georgia, there's been legislation put forward calling for the state to ban the use of mountaintop removal coal in coal-fired power plants within the state. And I would think, given the way that Mainers feel about their beautiful, beautiful, beautiful home state, that might be something that could be got going in the state house in Augusta.
But you know something, Bob, I got to tell you right now, people that actually work here for a living and people that have retired up here, because you know I live close to Brunswick, Maine. Okay, we used to have a military base, which you know is being phased out. You know, you have a lot of retirees that have settled in this area, and of course they're all totally Republican, and these people have their own idea about what should and could happen, you know. And, you know, for the rest of us, we're all just a statistic as far as that's concerned.
There is a certain amount of truth in that, and one of the reasons that I encourage people to do things like getting active with their state governments on those issues is because it's a way to stop being a statistic. It's a way to actually make your voice and your power heard.
Well, you know, in a representative area, of course, senators Snow and Collins, you know, they actually cross the line many times to do very good things. But we have a new representative that has just replaced another one. Her name is Shelley Pingree, and she has just recently voted on the non-funding of the war, like twice, you know.
Yeah, she's doing the right
very
thing.
Very recently, you know.
Yeah.
Mike Michu in the second district, because we only have two districts in the state, although it's actually you could have more districts, but that's what we have, you know. But the representatives certainly seem to stand up for the right of the people in this state, and we've been blue for quite some time, you know. And I just think it's just terrible how other things go on.
Well, I understand that completely, and I know that there are groups in Maine that are working on issues related to coal burning, because you know it goes all the way back to acid rain in the 60s and 70s that was deforesting your state, and
well, that's true.
And some steps were taken to try to alleviate some of that, but not nearly enough. And if people become active and knowing how independent spirited Mainers are, I have a feeling they could really shake things up there, and it would be terribly exciting to see. And you know, personally, I would be happy to come up there and help you know, spur the struggle on if it was at all possible. I'm always willing to do something like that, just to raise the awareness, because you know there are some mountains that pass through Maine too, right?
Well, yes. Oh my God, yes.
Right, and those are the Appalachians. You're just lucky enough not to have any coal
and, you
in
know,
yours.
The Appalachian Trail definitely goes right through here and starts
exactly.
Well, the tip top up here, but. Getting back to your acid rain thing there, I want to let you know that we had paper mills for many years in this state, you know, that immigrants from Canada came down and worked in the shoe factories, you know, and the paper mills, you know. And, you know, it's like as far as discrimination, I mean, absolutely. People that came from away totally were discarded as being something less than human.
Exactly, and that's the story of work. Yeah, that's the naturally developing story of working people in this country.
But every day you talk about what happens down where you live, you know, in West Virginia, it must be horrible to see beautiful landscape just totally decimated.
It's hellish to see.
And I can't imagine it, but I'm just saying to you, God, you know, if I witnessed that, it would be horrible.
You can, and in fact, you can have a look and see if you want to go to crmw.net, crmw.net, or ohvec.org. There are tons of photographs, most of them aerial in nature, that can show you the breadth and expanse of this kind of stuff. It truly is breathtaking. And the point that I continue to try to make is that it extends far, far outside Appalachia. It's not a local or a regional issue. It's not just about our mountains. It's about the toxins that are unleashed from our mountains and are dumped on the rest of the country.
Yes. Isn't it amazing that more voices are not allowed, financially to be on the airwaves to just spread a different message, compared to the crap you hear out there now?
It's frustrating, to say the least, but it's not necessarily amazing, because this is not a corporate, and for the most part, most of the folks I know who do liberal talk aren't doing a corporate friendly message, and that's why the only way that the horn survives is on listener contributions, because that way we are free to talk about the things based on a simple judgment basis of right versus wrong.
Well, Bob, I just contributed to you, and I'm just a youngster. I'm only 56 years old, but I just want to let you know that I really support you totally, and Mike Malloy, and, several out there that actually speak the truth, you know. And I must say, if you want to know anything else about the state, I will call back, or I'll give you a number, and you can call me. And
absolutely, and keep us apprised of the doings that way.
Absolutely. One more thing.
Sure.
Your barbecue recipe. I need to know that.
The meat end of it is fairly simple.
No, I know that. I know that end of it. I need to know your
the sauce.
Pickle based recipe for a nice.
That's real easy. I start up by mincing finely a whole bunch of onion and garlic. And I sweat that in either butter or oil until it's translucent and soft and all that wonderful flavors come loose. And then I add, again, because of the high fructose corn syrup thing, I try to get locally produced apple jelly and either molasses or honey. And I use that for a sweetener, not a whole lot. And then load in the kosher dill pickle juice until it's real good and thin. I get that, and that's about the time that I'll throw in a couple of chipotles to add some heat, maybe some hot sauce, some this and that, depending on how hot I want to make it. I usually throw in some ground mustard. Then I add in some regular yellow mustard and let that all simmer down and just start adding, again, no high fructose corn syrup, just start adding a little bit of ketchup or tomato puree if you're a purist. To give it that nice orangish, not all the way to full on red or brown, but just a nice orangey color, and it shouldn't be real thick. It should have some thinness to it because this.
Right, it should, yes.
Yeah, because this isn't something like you brush on your ribs necessarily and put over the fire. Well, I don't like to incinerate my barbecue sauce.
They have like a mop sauce, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is more like when you pull the shoulders off of the smoker and you've shredded it with the meat fork and everything, then this is the stuff you put on top of that on the bun with the slaw or whatever, however you want to serve it.
Most excellent.
And it's right tasty. And I like mine real fiery, you know, melt the spoon hot.
I do, too. Yeah. How old is your son that's going into ninth grade?
He is 14 years old.
Today is my son's, he's actually going into junior year, but 16-year-old birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday to him.
And he's having a good time. He's got a friend over, and life is good for him.
Very good, very good. Well, if we can just get through the thunderstorm and not be knocked off the air again, I'll be doing great.
We've had quite a few up here, actually, too.
And
beautiful weather, but, you know, thunderstorms, they hit you hard.
Well, this is that time of year when those pop-up convection storms happen. They come out of nowhere, and then they're gone as quickly as they happened. So, you know, you just get used to it in a place with high humidity like this or perhaps where you are.
Well, I just want to let you know that there are a lot of really good people up in the state of Maine.
Oh, I know that. You know, I absolutely knew that.
Pierpont, whatever his name was there, Buell. Yeah. And we certainly, you know, listen to you on a regular basis and totally support you and, you know, really enjoy all the people that call into you.
Well, thank you very kindly, and I hope you won't be a stranger. Call back anytime, all right?
Okay, I'm Snuffy John. How about that?
All right, Snuffy John. Sounds good.
You bet, man.
You take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. Oh, wonderful. I always love hearing from new callers, new listeners, or listeners of old vintage who are calling in for the first time. That's Snuffy John calling from Maine. It's about 8 minutes past the hour, and we will take a little break and come back. Lines are all wide open and clear. If you want to jump in on the conversation, do feel free to do so. Barring that, there's other stuff to do, too. We'll get to all of it. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes rolling into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Ever go down Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Yankee come to Trinidad, they got the young girls all going mad. Young girls say they treat them nice, make Trinidad like paradise. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar.
Chicka-chicka to Mona's Isle. Native girls all dance and smile. Help soldier celebrate his leave. Make every day like New Year's Eve. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola. Go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter. Working for the Yankee Dollar. In old Trinidad, I also fear the situation is mighty queer. Like the Yankee girl, the native swoon, when she hear der bingle croon. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Out on Manzanella Beach, G.I. romance with native peach. All night long make tropic love. Next day sit in hot sun and cool off. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola. Go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter. Working for the Yankee dollar. Rum and Coca-Cola. Rum and Coca-Cola. Working for the Yankee
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I love that track. And I guess it's taken me near 50 years to understand why it is that my father used to say, you know, all this dirty stuff. Why does it have to be dirty? Why they got to hit us over the head about it? Hit us over the head with it. Listening to that lyric, my God, that's downright. That lyric is positively insurgent. Yeah, the Andrews Sisters with Rum and Coca-Cola from 1940, God knows when. No, that's insidious. That's really, really worm in the apple stuff. Got that beautiful kind of happening upbeats, the Caribbean sound to it. And at the same time, those beautiful Andrews Sisters vocals. And it's a song about women and their daughters prostituting themselves out for American soldiers? There's genius in that. Absolutely, there is genius in that. 14 minutes past the hour. Like I said, light it up if you want to. Kath writing in. This is a great little email. This is inspiring. Kath from Canada here. Just wanted to let you know that even though I cannot often sit and listen to the entire program, I really appreciate it. And the left in Canada could learn something from your show. Keep up the great work. I would never dream that I have anything to teach anybody's left, or teach much of anybody, frankly, but that is certainly inspiring on a number of levels. It's the kind of thing that keeps us going. And listen, a quick reminder before I do go back to the phones. You know, I've mentioned the first two nights of the week here that Ben Birch was in a bit of a bind over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He was down to $4 in the White Rose Society kitty. And needed to pay the July, may I remind you, this is August the 4th, the July White Rose bill. Well, I am proud to announce that Ben has reached enough money, if you check the thermometer over there at WhiteRoseSociety.org, he's reached the monetary level to make it possible for him to pay the July bill. Now we have to work on August. And in light of the fact that we are working on August and we work month to month, I wanted to run an idea past you real quick because I'm strongly considering this, and it may be a unilateral decision. We try to raise $2,000 a month to keep the horn going. Ben has heretofore tried to raise money separately on his own to keep White Rose going. But the vast bulk, I suspect, I can't be sure. I haven't asked Ben. This is based on speculation and not upon known fact or empirical data, if you will. But I suspect that the vast amount of the bandwidth that gets eaten up these days at WhiteRoseSociety.org is horn-related. And that means that on top of the $2,000 we have to try to raise to keep things going here, there's an additional $500 out there that Ben's been able to take care of over at White Rose Society. And it occurs to me that it's probably not right for me not to include the White Rose Society bill in what we're doing here. So I think, and I'm not trying to make this any harder on anybody, I'm trying to make it easier for all concerned. And even though July was a brutally difficult month and we pulled up $700 short or so, which means about $1,300 raised in the month, but, you know, hey, I was gone for a bunch of the weeks. I've just had a vote in from John Fox, our chief engineer down in Australia, saying, I say go for it, add $500 to our monthly goal, and that's what I'm going to do. Beginning this month and going forward, the monthly fundraising goal is $2,500. Now, that's not a gun to anybody's head or a knife to anybody's throat or a feather to the bottom of anybody's foot, depending on how we define torture amongst ourselves. It's merely a reflection of reality. We will try to raise $2,500 a month, and $500 of that will go directly to Ben Birch for the maintenance of the White Rose Society. Because, again, Ben won't send a bill. Ben would rather get his foot stomped than to call into this program and say, hey, folks, remember, we've got to keep the White Rose on the air so the horn can keep going. Ben's not that kind of guy. There's a sort of unobtrusive little PayPal button there, and once in a while he might put up something saying, we need to raise some funds. But Ben is not going to get in anybody's face because he finds this fundraising stuff as loathsome and odious as I do, if not more. So going forward, the monthly fundraising goal, and if you hate me for this, send me the emails and I'll try to explain myself. Going forward, the monthly fundraising goal for the horn is $2,500 because there's no sense in, I can sit here and talk into this microphone till hell freezes over, but if there aren't White Rose Society servers on the other end of this, there's no point. So that's where it stands. You can always use the PayPal button at WhiteRoseSociety.org, but we will send, assuming that we meet our fundraising goals every month, we will send $500 directly to Ben Birch to cover, and you know what? That's a bargain, considering what Ben Birch has done for literally 8 long years, saving. I'm not kidding. This isn't hyperbole. The only reason that there is liberal internet radio is because of Ben Birch. There's no other clearinghouse for liberal internet radio. It's Ben. Ben did it. Somewhere along the way, you know, one of these days when we finally catch up with right-wing radio and there's 1,000 hours of ours for every hour of theirs, there will have to be a good 150, 200 pages of the history of it devoted solely and only to the long and thankless hours that Ben Birch devoted to keeping it going. At times when he had no health care, at times when he was sick, at times when he had no money for himself, he kept it going. And you know what? Let me make something clear. In light of the struggle that we're talking about against a noise machine from the right that is full of nothing but putrid, vomitous filth, and the effort that we are engaged in to save this republic against the predators of the right and the teabaggers and the rest of the fascist thugs, what Ben Birch has done is nothing less than pure, unmitigated, unrefined, undiluted patriotism. So that's why the monthly fundraising goal is going to $2,500. Gosh, I hope I haven't lost this caller. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Andy from California.
Andy, formerly of New Jersey.
You got it. Hey, I love that kind of talk, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. It just happens to be easy because it's true.
Hey, your little sojourn there to the Netroots Nation, that was too bad that turned out that way. That state of Nevada, man, that is a pretty red place. Pretty red.
Well, it is. And there's
Union people are red, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. That was the thing that blew me away. I mean, the state of Nevada seems organized around a common principle of hating the brown people.
Yeah.
Only, you know, their brown people have Spanish accents.
Right. I stopped through in Elko, and I turned on the TV there, and the only news I could get was Fox News.
Yeah, Jesus.
I knew I was in a bad place.
Yeah, and if I may correct, when you say the only news you could get was Fox News, you got no news. You got Fox News, which is a brand name.
Well, you got propaganda, what you got.
Yeah.
Hey, I drove through West Virginia, too, on my way, just the panhandle part. First time ever in West Virginia, I think, as little of it I was in.
Oh, yeah? What part?
Oh, just the northern part, you know, from Pennsylvania to Ohio, the little.
Oh, you were on I-70. You were on I-70, and you shot.
I-70, exactly.
Yeah, you shot through past Wheeling.
Exactly. I had to stop in and see Nellie Fox's hometown. On my way. You ever heard of Nellie Fox?
Oh gosh, yes.
The baseball player. I used to use his bat when I was in high school.
Oh wow. Yeah, so, played for the Philadelphia Athletics.
I think the White Sox.
Oh, maybe. Okay, yeah, maybe. Yeah, because he was Double X Fox.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, maybe it was the White Sox. I will have a note from David in Tennessee momentarily telling me where or who.
He's the White Fox Sox fan. Yeah, that's right. He had a 4x4 piece of lumber he used to use as a bat because he was just a base hitter.
Yeah, White Sox, David's confirming now. Yeah.
All right. I had a bunch of your podcasts on my iPod lined up, so you kept me going throughout the trip. And one podcast I heard, I was just a little bit disturbed. One of your listeners in Phoenix, I think you know who I'm talking about, was talking about Bloomberg and how he liked immigrants. And, you know, having come from New York and putting up with Mr. Bloomberg, this guy... And he did do some good things recently with the 911, since it's prayer meeting Wednesday. With the 911 mosque, he's come out on the right side.
Yeah, which I might add is not a mosque, but...
Right. It's a rec center, actually.
Yeah, it's a Muslim YMCA.
Right, and the guy's good with gun control as well. But man, when it comes to labor, and when it comes to working class people, and when it comes to unions, he hates us.
Oh, I don't. Anybody that's got
your
money,
your listeners have to understand that. I mean, this guy is an economic terrorist against labor unions.
Well, any man who has money at the levels he has money is by definition going to be a despiser of working people.
Absolutely, he can't stand a person. You know, the minimum wage in New York City is $7.25 an hour. They can't get a living wage in that city. $7.25. Is the minimum wage. And you have to go to San Francisco, where I am now. One reason I like the place is it's over $10 an hour, the minimum wage, mandatory in San. But not in New York. It's $7.25, the same as the federal.
And
that's insane.
Yeah, it takes nothing of takes nothing of cost of living into account. Because let's be clear, Andy. You can't live on $7.25 an hour here where I am.
Right, let alone New York.
Let alone New York City.
Yeah, he loves immigrants because he knows the immigrants can come in and break the unions. He wants to put Walmart in the city. The people of New York and the union fighting to keep Walmart out. He wants Walmart in. He's doing everything he can to find development space for Walmart.
That just blows my mind. In a city with the literally proud retail history that New York City has, and they need Walmart?
Right. Man, he's got to have a Walmart. And of course, he's doing everything he can to break the teachers' union there, like they are everywhere else, by bringing in charter schools. That's been his big mandate, to totally blow out the teachers' union. You know, anywhere the Republicans are, well, he's not a Republican, he's an independent, but anywhere those type of people like him see a union, it's search and destroy time, right? So that's just my thing. I bet when I heard somebody sticking up for Bloomberg with immigrants, yeah, he wants immigrants. The only reason he wants immigrants is because he loves to see the class war taking place underneath.
Well, see, Andy, in my conversation with Gary a few minutes ago, that's why I was sort of exploring, you know, what could be the corporate angle, if there is one, behind these. Because Lindsey Graham, John McCain, John Kyle, John Cornyn, Mike Pence, and Mitch McConnell don't come out in favor of anything unless there's a damn good corporate reason to do it, Andy.
Right.
And I was sort of scratching my head for a while, wondering, you know, what's the corporate angle behind the doing away with the 14th Amendment? And then it dawned on me, literally in the course of the conversation with Gary. The reason for that is if you create a broader, deeper pool of disenfranchised people, that is a broader, deeper pool of people who will never belong to a union and who will
right.
always work for substandard wages and cling desperately to some semblance of life.
Right. The 14th Amendment was done in 1868. That was done after the Civil War.
Yes.
To make sure blacks could not be disenfranchised, being born in the U.S., making sure that they were citizens if they were born in the U.S., guaranteeing them the right to vote, the right to liberty and pursuit and all that other good stuff.
Right. The principal.
That's when it was done.
Yeah, the principal author.
The civil rights issue.
Yeah. The principal author of the 14th Amendment was an Ohio Republican named Representative John Bingham. And, in fact, on the Republican Party homepage, the GOP.com homepage, in its list of accomplishments, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, something coming from the irony department, Andy, GOP.com has the 14th Amendment listed as a major Republican accomplishment.
Right.
And they go so far as to say, all the votes in favor of the 14th Amendment were from Republicans. All the votes against it were from Democrats.
Right. Well, it was at that time the Republican Party was the progressive party when it first started out. They were a reform
right.
party under Lincoln, and that's why that
going
happened.
Forward from that about 18 came. Yeah, from about 1868 onward, they become a corporatized party.
Yeah, they got taken over just like both parties now have been taken over by the corporatists. You know, same garbage. But the other thing is about that is it's what's happened is there are abuses that have taken place recently, and I could see trying to rein in some of those abuses, you know, like having people just come over here and have babies so they become citizens. And like I heard this thing in South Korea where it's mandatory that you go into the military in South Korea. So if you come over here and have a baby here and have a U.S. citizen, they can't get drafted into the South Korean military. I mean, things like that. I don't think our forefathers thought in advance that you could have airplanes and just fly pregnant people over here and have babies and that it would be used by Mexicans to come over here as anchor children. I don't think they forethought that sort of thing happening, and it is something that, you know, should be maybe thought out, and there is some room for discussion, I must admit, quite frankly, but, you know, maybe some, or at least one parent has to be a U.S. citizen. Something like that. I don't know. But I can see there is some point on the other end because things are getting a bit out of hand.
But Andy, don't you think that it's overblown to suggest that because I've always viewed the immigration issue as being economically driven. I mean, there's not. I really don't think that there are plans being made south of the Sonoran Desert, where a peasant farming family says, "Hey, here's what we're going to do." I'm gonna get you. The guy says to his wife, "I'm gonna get you pregnant, and then we're gonna walk all the way across the desert so that we can have the baby in the United States." I don't see that as really a driving, motivating factor.
Well, there's definitely a lot of economic motive to why we have people who are undocumented. There's no question, and there's no question, I believe, it's because of Mr. Clinton and his NAFTA and the free trade agreements have just destroyed the economic well-being of a lot of lower-class people in other countries, and particularly the South American countries. There's no doubt that a lot of it is the fault of the free trade agreements that have knocked out the labor and wage standards and any bargaining power that they have in their own country to make a decent living. And you don't leave another country unless you're desperate.
You don't leave.
You've got to be desperate to leave your family.
Right.
I mean, there's no question.
Yeah, the word here is you don't leave home. You know, because it's because subsistence farmers in the highlands of southern Mexico and Guatemala. That's ground that they have literally successfully tilled for 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, for no apparent reason, you're going to pick up bag and baggage and risk life and limb to come and swab toilets in the United States? You can't make that make sense, and I'm not saying you were trying to. It doesn't add up.
It's desperation. There's no question. It's desperation. It's desperation.
And so, you know,
and the problem is, too, is that you've got a country, Mexico, anyway, who's got a leader, Calderon, who wasn't even elected, and they did the same thing that they did here. They stole the election in Mexico. Obrador should have actually won that election. He did win, but they stole it, and he was more for the common man and for more economic justice in Mexico, where you definitely have a true oligarchical system there of the rich just running roughshod over the poor. And their major industry, one of their major industries, is sending poor people over here and shipping that money back. And even the banks are in on it, where they've done all this stuff to make it easy to ship money back. And that's a part of the economic program of Calderon in Mexico, is to get money from the immigrants that are here in the U.S. That's how they keep that economy going.
And how do they do that? They do it via
a totally corrupt place.
Look at Western Union. What's the money behind Western Union? You
right.
think there are any tentacles that extend onto Wall Street behind Western Union? I do.
Right. And the same thing with Bank of America, HSBC Bank. They all have programs to transfer money between immigrants here and Mexico. It's a big moneymaker. It's a part of the whole economic policy of the state of Mexico. So.
Yeah, which is precisely why I look at this 14th Amendment stuff and I think, you know, I think the teabaggers kind of have it backwards here. You know, they're treating a symptom and not the disease.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know what, of all the things that I have heard, Andy, I have yet to hear a teabagger inveigh against NAFTA or CAFTA or any of these other free trade monstrosities that have wrecked the economies of countries south of the Rio Grande.
Agreed. Instead, they talk about building the highest possible wall we can possibly construct, which is one of the stupidest ass things you could ever think of. Instead of going to the real problem, like you said, is the trade policies and the economic policies.
Yeah, I mean, my God.
If the economic policies were decent, we wouldn't have this. This never happened before in the history of the U.S. The demise of unions, too, comes into play in this whole thing also.
Sure it does. And the demise of unions was facilitated by a bunch of corporate-sponsored right-wingers who slithered into the southern states that don't have a common border with Mexico, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, etc., Illinois, New York. But especially in the southern states, Andy, they slithered in and they started hollering about right to work. And they did that
right.
because there was a modicum of union organization in the south in places like textile mills and so forth. And the next thing you know, the union's gone, the mill is gone, and you got a whole bunch of people who don't have jobs anymore, and you set up business that is specifically geared toward hiring immigrant labor at rates that are substandard, to say the least, and subhuman as well.
Right.
And then, you know, there, you know, and then's the problem.
Absolutely. Agree with you. Another thing, since you brought up Gary, too, who you were talking to earlier, you've heard of Richard Viguerie?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Republican. And one thing he brings up, which I think is interesting, is he brings up that you have to destroy some of these candidates that are in office. You have to have them lose in order to get rid of them because they become so strong, like the Bill Clinton, the Clintonistas, the Rahm Emanuels, you know, the Evan Bayh. These people just become so strong. The only way to get rid of them is they have to lose. You know, these people have to lose. And I know it's terrible to see Democrats lose and Republicans come in because Republicans really aren't Republicans the way, like, my parents were Republicans, for God's sakes, but not the type of Republicans that we have today.
Well,
my father was a union shop steward, and he was a Republican, for God's sakes. I mean, you don't, that doesn't happen anymore, but.
You know,
the only way you get rid of these incumbents is they have to lose. You've got to get them out of the party. They have to be proven to be losers. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and your dad, the union shop steward, who was a Republican, I would hazard a guess that you would not disagree with me when I say he was an Eisenhower Republican.
Yes.
And
he believed in unions. He believed in fair wages for people, right?
Yeah.
He believed in people thinking for themselves and going as far as they could possibly go. And, you know, race and ethnicity, that meant nothing to him. Neither did their gender or their gender preferences. I mean,
well, and that goes back.
None of that meant anything to him. I mean,
but that goes back to that Republican Party of a former day that we're reminded of when we note that the Environmental Protection Agency was birthed into life in the Nixon administration, or that Richard Nixon was the last president to propose not a rise in a minimum wage, but an actual nationally standardized living wage.
Right.
Now, this is not me losing my mind and praising Richard Nixon. He was a thug and a criminal. But he was in the old days of American politics, a thug and a criminal with whom the other side could sometimes work.
Right.
You know, instead, that theme has been replaced by the apocryphal, largely apocryphal stories of how the Tip O'Neill would disagree with Ronald Reagan, but they were both friends at the end of the day, which I think is a totally BS piece of garbage, because at the end of the day, Ronald Reagan always won. You know, you're in a far better position from a perspective of experience and knowledge to know what a nightmare the 1986 tax reform was.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. When you bring the rate of the top tax bracket, now they want to bring it up to 39%, and holy hell is breaking up them fighting. And even Bloomberg over the weekend bringing up him again on Face the Nation or Meet the Press, one of those programs, he was against. You guys were $17 billion. No, you can't raise my taxes to 39% from 35%. That before Reagan got in there, Eisenhower was 91% the top tax. Let's go back to that, you son of a bee. And that would be, when Reagan got in, it was 71%, and Reagan lowered, after two lowerings of the top, he brought it down to 28%, for God's sake. That's the heyday of the rich people. That's how Reagan just completely, that was in 1988, I believe, that he just friggin' destroyed the whole taxing system and gave corporations all kind of major breaks, too. I mean, that just broke us and put all the tax burden on the middle class and the lower class. And, you know, it hasn't changed since. You want to just bring it up 4 percentage point, no, holy hell is breaking out.
And see, we are so easily sapped into their damn talking points, Andy. You know, nobody's talking about raising rich people's taxes. It's not a tax increase, because the Bush tax cuts were not designed to be permanent in the first place. They never should have been put in place in the first place.
Right. And I'm with Tom Hartman. Let's bring back the Reagan. Let's reverse the Reagan tax cut.
Yeah. How are they going to argue
Let's get back to there.
How are they going to argue that they don't want to live in the land and time of Reagan? Don't you want to be like the America Ronald Reagan wanted? We got to get you the Reagan tax rate.
Yeah, the heyday for the rich people. This is, and it's turned into a feudal state. I mean, we're in feudalism right now. That's what this has come to.
Sure it is.
Feudal state.
And it is absolutely, and I'm not trying to work the blue end of the room or anything, but it's the wet dream of the Republican Party. My father was telling me this stuff when I was 6 years old. The Republican Party seeks the end of the middle class. They want a group of, a small group of very rich and a vast group of very desperately poor.
Right. At least one thing my father did right. When he died, he was a registered Democrat. And when he died in like 1999, I mean, he would keep on telling me, he goes, I want to stay alive just as long as I can see the revolution. I want to see the revolution take place, you know, where the working people take this country back. He didn't live long enough to see that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like my dad. My dad very badly wanted to live to see the end of the Bush administration.
Right. But he was sure there was going to be a revolution here.
Well, there may yet be, but it's a revolution that none of us want.
I know, we're still waiting. It won't be pretty. There's no doubt. It won't be pretty if it happens.
Well, I mean, you know, you've got these the blathering maniacs of the right out there screaming for people to pick up their guns. You know, I had a brilliant email exchange over the weekend, a wonderful email exchange with our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky, and he said he got into it with some right wingers about guns, and all these guys carrying their guns to Walmart and so forth. Hell, I've seen it here. Talked about it on the air. And that,
right.
And he said, I told some of them that if it ever got to the point where I felt like I needed to carry a gun to Walmart, I'd just put bars on the windows and the doors and do all my shopping on the inner tubes and let the big brown truck bring it to my door. And he said it didn't go over well at all with those heroic patriots. So,
well, they have to understand, too, some of us might actually fire back, too.
Well, that's Then the idea of a shootout in Action Alley is not in Walmart is not that it's not a silly piece of satire anymore.
Yeah.
And one of these days, it's going to happen. What do we do the next time there's a trampling on Black Friday after Thanksgiving and somebody whips out their piece? Oh, wait a minute, that actually happened a couple of years ago at the same time that guy got trampled on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
There was another guy brought out old Betsy and gunned somebody down in an aisle of a Toys R Us.
Oh, man.
And it didn't get a whole lot of press, right? Because we were busy talking about the tramp, the Who concert inside Wally World.
Right.
Jesus.
Oh, well. Well, anyway. Nice talking to you. I love listening to your program. I mean, no doubt about it. Even on podcasts while I'm driving a truck, it was great.
And well, let me ask, are you settled in and everything?
Excuse me?
Are you settled in and everything out there in California now?
Yeah, I have an apartment I've been moving in. As a matter of fact, I just bought some furniture to help me give me more room. The place is pretty small, but I do have everything set. All I need is a job.
We'll
be all ready to rock and roll.
We will cross our fingers, Andy. We will cross our fingers.
New York City unemployment checks in California.
You know what? That doesn't sound like that bad a thing. I mean,
well, it's not. You know, anybody who thinks being on unemployment is fun is completely out of their mind.
Oh, without a doubt,
trivial. It's ridiculous.
I was talking more about the geographic change, not change, and I apologize for being flip.
Oh, yeah, I lived here for 6 years before going back east, and I love coming back again. It's a much nicer environment. I love the outdoors, and I love the sun and. This is the place to live, if that's what you are.
Yeah, you'll get considerably more of it there, I suspect.
Yeah, certainly not in New Jersey.
If I may be so bold to ask, Northern or Southern California?
I'm in the north. I'm just outside of San Francisco.
Paradise.
Yeah, it's beautiful here.
Well, I hope things settle in even better. I hope a job comes your way or you go toward a job. And by all means, maybe I'm glad. I appreciate you checking in. And keep us apprised of your status, and And share what you're thinking, because I have a feeling that your take is not going to change by virtue of change in geography.
You're exactly right.
All right, Andy, have yourself a great night.
It doesn't change anywhere in the country. We're still fighting the same war, man. The battle goes on.
Exactly. That's the thing. I think you'd have to cross the pond or the border.
The good thing is there's good people on both ends of the country who are fighting this battle.
Yeah, it's a matter of bringing them together, and that's part of our small contribution to the effort.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Andy. Right. Have a great night.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Formerly Andy of New Jersey, now Andy of California. A couple of emails rolling in the interim. William writing, I will never understand how on earth people were sucked into Walmart and these other supersized box stores. When these damn things sprung up, their main goal was a cheaper price, and they got suckers in for that idea. Once they eliminated all the competition, they raised their prices and brought in cheap Chinese toxic crap, and in doing so, they forced even ma-and-pa shops that squeaked through the fate of death to also import Chinese crap just to compete. And that's the truth. I remember when you couldn't walk into a Wally World without a bunch of American flags staring you down. Made in America, made in America, made in America. It was on every rack. You can't find one of those signs anywhere in any Walmart anymore. But to be fair, you can't find them in Kmart, and you can't find them in Target either. And Target's a whole other ball of wax because of the dirty, rotten, filthy political contributions they made, up in Minnesota? Yeah. But William continues, the entire plan was to import crap and eliminate American jobs, and simply because people are short-sighted, they fell for this. Everything is a chain now. Guitar Center used to exist here in Hollywood and in Chicago. Now they're all over the country selling imported crap. That was in 1980 into the mid-80s when there were real people selling made in USA products. A made in USA Fender Strat was $600. Now they're close to $2,000. Sounds like William knows his axes. I suspect he does. This has been going on for a long time, but killed all the independent shops. Hell, I worked for Ford since 1972, and in 1980, most of the parts for a full-size Ford car were made in China. Labels all over the parts. And for what? All for the lie of saving a buck and cutting one's own throat in order to do so? They're right. These jobs are gone. They're gone forever. And the blood flows on, and the tent cities, and the homeless people grow, and there's no color involved here other than greenbacks. Ron writing in, I've been saying for years that the Republicans have been endeavoring to turn the U.S. into Mexico. A few very rich folks and a vast underclass. Can you say peon? Yeah, I can say that. I can say serf. I can say fellahin. I can say helot. I can say the names of all, or not all, but many of the abused underclasses that have existed throughout history on this sweet little blue-green time machine hurtling through space. But the point is that, at least during the Enlightenment, the idea was that we were going to take steps beyond that, that we were going to get over that, that we were capable of growing past some of our baser impulses, like shamelessly using other human beings. But the users are still out there, and the users still own the ranch. And I take no joy in making note of that. It has been a very interesting evening. You guys have been absolutely stunning. Three nights running. Oh, I think that rhymes. One last thing, a couple of last things. Just because, there's a level of stupid. There's a level of terrified ignorant that exists within teabagging the right-wing world that never ceases to amaze me, and I suspect it's the same for you. I've said a million times over that that I have the creeping suspicion that teabaggers and wingnuts watch Dr. Strangelove and they think that it is a documentary and not a piece of fiction. Well, I got more confirmation of that today. We take you now to Denver, Colorado. 3 months ago, Denver Mayor and Colorado gubernatorial candidate John Hickenlooper, a Democrat, helped to start, and I think Horn resident optimist Preston has mentioned this as well. He helped to start a bike sharing program. Bicycles. It's been a huge success with over 14,000 memberships so far. Bicycle sharing. Because, you know, what's a bicycle doing while it's sitting still? It's not really being a bicycle. It's being something that's just sitting there, not being useful. So why not share? Wow, you remember that book about everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten and what rule one was sharing? Repiglicans don't share. Teabaggers don't share. Because, it turns out, sharing is communism. I give you, my friends, Repiglican gubernatorial candidate Dan Mays. M-A-E-S. Dan Mays is a darling of the teabaggers. And he has given an interview in which he has said that John Hickenlooper's bicycle sharing program, to the extent that it's John Hickenlooper's bicycle sharing program and not just Denver's, and everything that goes along with it, you know, trying to cut down greenhouse gas emissions, encouraging a better cardiopulmonary health by virtue of a little bit of pedal pushing here and there. Well, according to, God. Oh my God, these people are stupid. But it's the mean part of the stupid that makes them dangerous. They're stupid and mean. They're moopid. No, that sounds too close to moped, because that might be communist, too. Steen? Nah, doesn't carry any meaning. No, they're just mean and stupid. Pig-eyed, mean, and stupid. Because Dan Mays has said that the bicycle sharing program is converting Denver into a United Nations community. This is all very well disguised, but it'll be exposed. At one time, Mays says, he thought that the mayor's efforts to promote cycling and other environmental initiatives were harmless and well-meaning. But now he realizes that that's exactly the attitude that they want you to have.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
Yeah. What's the difference? It's the same creep. It's the same guy. It's the same theory. Because bicycling, I don't know, leads to ownership of Mao's little red book and everybody wearing drab, poor-fitting gray clothing? I don't think Dan Mays has ever seen a pair of cycling shorts. The drab, ill-fitting gray clothing might be a step forward. But, see, that just brands me as another liberal. Besides, them little hats with the red stars or the hammers and sickles or whatever the hell we're on, they'd probably blow off in the wind while you're doing your communist cycling. I would say they'd lost their minds, but I don't think they had a mind to lose in the first place. But don't think that this is just Dan Mays. Because when I read the Dan Mays story earlier today, the first thing I thought of was actually not Dr. Strangelove and General Jack D. Ripper at Burpleson Air Force Base. Peace is our profession. No, the first thing I thought of was Don Blankenship. I thought of Don Blankenship, who delivered that lecture to the rip-snort Chamber of Commerce in Mingo County a year or so ago, and I've been to some of these communist countries. And that's what they do. The first thing they do, they start talking about how they want they want to be green and they want to be energy efficient. And the next thing you know, they're building mass transit systems, got people riding buses everywhere. And the next thing you know, you're on a bicycle and you're living 9 families to an apartment. and that's the way you lose your freedom. I think I played that on this program at one point in time. I'm not kidding. But see, that's the thing. The things they accuse us of are the things they want. Because you know what a desperate, terrified, clinging to their bare existence workforce? They can't afford their own home. And they do live nine families to an apartment. And they do stack themselves like cordwood wherever they can. Because, you see, tenement life for corporate America is the good life. And it is their fondest, wettest dream. Where the cost of labor is next to nothing. And by God, if labor says anything about it, it'll be nothing. I think they're still pissed off that they got the 84-hour work week taken away from them. But that's okay, because Dan Mays and Don Blankenship are out there warning that bicycle riding, rather than leading to better cardiopulmonary function and perhaps a longer life and less need for medical services and less of a drain on the medical industrial complex, that instead of doing all that, what it does is, well, it promotes a UN society. Amazing. Jack writing from Shreveport, he says, when you said Lupid in connection, and I didn't know I did, but apparently I did, when you said Lupid in connection with the John Hickenlooper bicycle madness in Denver, I thought of lupus, which I think is the disease that attacks, wherein our bodies attack our own bodies. It seems like that's what Repiglickens do. Ignorantly attack our own social body. They vote against their own self-interest. The problem is, they take everyone else down with them. And that's the part to which I object. So that's Wednesday prayer meeting. Congratulations to all the decent people in the state of California in regard to Vaughn Walker's decision. I hope it results in good things happening for all people who love each other and want to commit to one another in that state. And I look forward to the day when that freedom is accorded to every member of every state in this nation. Thanks for joining in. Thanks for helping out. Remember, Ben Birch still needs your help at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, yeah, I'd be lying if I said that we don't need your help, too. The new fundraising goal is $2,500, and we will keep up with it. I'll let you know how that goes as it goes. Thanks to all of you who contribute. Thank you. Thank you for your ideas, your financial contributions, your phone calls. Great to have a new caller this evening. Glad to know that Andy's settled in California. Thanks for your emails, your participation in the chat room. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, Susan, for the numbers on those cancer numbers this evening. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo at Cavalcade of Crazy. Cavalcade of Crazy, of course, is the op-ed column at headonradionetwork.com. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne at Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Please keep Judy Bonds in your best thoughts and prayers and hopes as she battles cancer. Again, I'll note that you can send any good wishes directed to her attention to me at this email address, and I will deliver them into her family's hands so that they can tell her that they have received them. And just send them right here to me, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Just put "for Judy" in the subject line. Judy is one of those folks at Cold River Mountain Watch that I consistently refer to as the hardest working, bravest people I know. And they are brave in every aspect of every undertaking that they endeavor. CRMW.net and ColdRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.